Who the fuck is that guy?
Who the fuck is that?
Oh, the world's gonna end, but I think I got the microphones all balanced out, so I'm happy about that.
All right, I'll have to check with Johnny.
Yeah,
out for sure.
Hello, Johnny. You need it. Actually, also Daza noticed it as well.
Oh wow! So yeah. So many listeners.
I was really surprised. I was like, "Yeah, we're having a fucking banner week with this show. This one will be really good too." I have a
We've really found our niche after a year.
Well, you know, I'm a slow learner. What can I say?
I would say it's the other way around, but what do I know?
You know a lot because you're Matt and I'm Mike, and this is MMA and Stuff at HalfGuarded.com.
Welcome, everybody. let's talk some MMA, and then we'll talk some stuff. We'll do the normal drill here. My first question for you this week is, did you see Invicta 25 last week?
Mostly did.
Okay, so that was August 23rd.
As a Thursday.
August 31st. I'm sorry, August 31st in Lemoore, California, at some palace that I mispronounce, apparently.
Tai Chi.
In the main event, Yana Kunitskaya defeated Raquel Palui via unanimous decision, 50-45 on all three scorecards. This was for their bantamweight title, I believe?
Yes, it was.
And I did not see the fight, but it sounds like it was pretty one-sided.
From what I kind of recall, yeah. I'm now remembering that while I did watch that show, I kind of got bored.
That sounds like a lot of takedowns to me or something. Like that level of a scorecard where it's 50-45 on all three cards is
pretty unusual. I mean, look, the only real women's MMA I've watched in the past week that mattered, I saw the Ultimate Fighter with Roxanne Matafari, and she looked really good in her victory, so that was good.
Mm. Okay, anybody, do you have any memories of Invicta 25?
No. I mean, I have memories of kind of having this idea of, I'm not going to watch or remember any of this. So I have memories of not remembering.
Were you home for that, or were you out camping?
I was home.
You were home.
I was home. I just chose to watch season 2 of Arrested Development.
Okay. And how was the cabin or whatever you were doing? Is that Minnesota?
That was Minnesota, yeah, right there. Way up north. About 45 minutes away from Fargo, which is right on the border there. Not that that really is a good frame of reference for anyone ever, because it's Fargo.
Good movie.
Yes, but, you know, there's a reason why that movie resonates true to many people in the Midwest, because Fargo is a desolate, boring place. Ooh. But yes, the adventure to our cabin, family cabin, was a successful one. Nobody died. I'm the only one that got injured. It's good times had by all.
Obviously, the follow-up question is, how did you get injured?
Well, the real injury I have.
I like how you forced me to ask the questions, by the way.
I knew you guys didn't do. it breaks up the monotony. Creates a bit of an artificial repartee. My cousins have all their little kids up there, and they're all playing the sand, and I was drinking, and I had taken a sauna, and what, you know, we do up there is you take a sauna up the little sauna place there, room, and you run down the beach, and I like to run off the dock and do flips and things like that, and jump in the water. Well, I was just ran out of the sauna, probably, yeah, again, impaired, and I'm running to the beach, and I trip over this freaking kid's, like, toy. And apparently, it's not even just, like, one of their toys. It's like an old, old, old school shovel, as in, I'm 90% sure that my dad used that shovel when he was a child. So I cut my foot open kind of a little on the top. I don't have tetanus, though, I guess. I mean, I'm still alive. So that was okay. my grand injury.
Okay, so no stitches, nothing major.
No, although when I look at it now, I'm like, oh, it kind of hurts on the being ear. Nobody gives a shit.
No, do you think it seemed less bad at the time because you were drinking? Sometimes that happens.
I didn't even notice it until the next day. I had zero clue. I went out and drank for several more hours. We went to the Indian casino. I ate at the buffet. We came back that night. We played some trivia game, and my brother and I whooped the shit out of everyone. And then I woke up in the morning, I'm like, what the f-? And I'm like, what the fuck is going on with my foot? That's weird.
Yeah, it happens. But you're here to talk about it, so it's all good. Following Invicta a couple days later on September 2nd in Rotterdam, Netherlands, we had a UFC fight night that aired strictly on Fight Pass. I doubt many people watch this show. If you had to guess how many people, like, watch this, what would your guess be?
Are there numbers for this?
No, I'm asking you if you had to guess.
Oh, if I had to guess. I thought you were going to, like, spring it on me. Like, oh, look at that.
No, I wish.
I don't know. In the United States / Canada, 45,000 people.
Yeah, I've seen so many different numbers on how many people actually subscribe to Fight Pass. Like, I've seen some say, like, 500,000, and other times I've seen, like, 200. There's really no firm numbers on how many subscriptions they actually have.
Yeah, I have no idea. You know, all I've ever heard is that they're okay, and obviously they're good enough that, you know, they keep it going. But
right.
Also, they're not so high that they're going out of their way to put on super high-profile events anymore. I mean, they put on decent enough shows, but there was a period there, you know, last year, and they had Anderson Silva and Michael Bisping on that show. I mean, that was like, oh, they're really pushing it. They've backed off that. They have some things here and there, but they're just phoning it in. So, again, it does all right.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you wonder if they were having a better year, they would put better fights on Fight Pass, but it's like they need everybody they have with no Conor, Ronda, no million buy shows this year, no Brock, none of these huge draws that they had last year. They could afford to put Anderson and Bisping on it because they were making so much money.
I also think it's a function of WMEI more than anything. I think Zuffa was far more likely to take a long view, whereas obviously WMEI just cares about, I mean, to their, I guess it's their money, but they want to get this thing over with. They want to get a huge return right away. So.
Yeah, could be. In the main event of
my fucking Apple TV is froze. This is bullshit. Sorry.
It's okay.
It's upsetting.
We had Alexander Volkov defeating Stefan Struve by TKO at 3:30 of the third round. I'm assuming you saw most of this card.
Hold on a second.
I'm not going anywhere.
I'll unplug it there? Yeah. Okay, unplug it there to reset. I saw some of this card. I saw the main event.
And what'd you think?
Volkov kind of won the way I would have guessed he'd win, which is just kind of being a little tougher. I liked his boxing. I thought his boxing looked pretty sharp, all things considered, especially when you're dealing with a guy awkward like Struve, but it's still Struve where, you know, the name of the game is you just outlast him, and that guy just, he can't take a shot at all. He is so broken chin-wise, so. Hey, Volkov did what he's got to do, and I don't know, maybe they could tee up him and Stipe. Give Stipe set the record with the American hero from Trump's Ohio taking on the evil invading Russian.
I think they'd rather do Kane, but time will tell if Kane can actually get into the cage again. I was thinking maybe Volkov and Ngannou, because he needs a fight. And
Velasquez, there's one Mexican not taking any jobs from Americans. That's pretty good. Ngannou and Volkov make a ton of sense. I actually think that'd actually be a pretty good fight, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's two guys who are new to the company but have some potential and would kind of show everybody where each guy really is. Are they really a top-level heavyweight? Whatever that means in 2017. Another disappointing fight for Struve, though, man. It's like he can never put it all together. Sometimes he's knocking out Miocic, and other times he's just getting dropped by, you know, these guys who aren't the best strikers in the world. I just feel like he can never put it all together and take that next leap up the ladder.
No, he's limited is what he is. His cardio isn't all that great. And as he's gotten older, he's become much better at using his size. But that chin is a real problem. Like, he just got no answer for that.
But it's amazing that guys can move in so easy on him and do that. I mean, he's still only 29. It feels like he's been in the UFC forever. I mean, he debuted at UFC 95.
Right? Well, giants age differently.
That is true. They don't last that long. There's so truth in that.
He's an actual giant. Like, we're talking like he's this mythical creature, like in, you know, like in Game of Thrones. But yeah.
Maybe he should move into pro wrestling. They like their 7-footers.
That's right, they do. Also, it's really great. I got my Apple TV working, in case anyone cares. On the free fights that the UFC has on YouTube, they have like the card. They have like the graphic pop up before they go on, and they still show Ngannou and Dos Santos.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah, there's still posters and stuff with that. That fight's been out for weeks because
really nobody gives a shit about correcting the record on this one.
Apparently not. I was thinking that today. We went from like one of the weakest Fight Pass shows to one of the weaker pay per view shows back to back. So, it's how it goes when you load up too many shows and your top stars are out and you didn't build new ones, I guess.
Yeah, but wasn't that one show in July really great and worth months of nothing?
No, I do not believe that. I would buy a show with a couple good fights. Anyway, anything else on this show that no one watched? Matter, catch your eye?
Nah, no.
Nothing. The one guy, I know we made fun of him last week because of his name, Zabit Magomed Sharipov.
Oh, yes.
We were talking about like he was, I forget how, like a Chechen Marina Sharapova or whatever.
It's like a propensity for, ranking restaurants.
Oh, like Zagat?
Yeah.
That's obscure. That was a good reference. I'm surprised you even knew that. That's good.
I know everything.
That's inaccurate. But he looked good. He was doing like spin kicks. He did a Showtime kick off the cage. He was throwing like back elbows. And I think he won by rear naked choke. Granted, it's against a guy named Mike Santiago that no one knows. But he was a pretty exciting guy and had a good fight, and he kind of stood out on the undercard to me. I didn't watch the entire undercard, I'll be honest, but what I did see, he looked pretty good.
Well, it's good to know that we have yet another fucking dickhead with a name one can pronounce who will never stand out in a crowd doing well.
Yeah, he did a Showtime kick. And Michelle Prezeris, the guy I said that was like all roided up at 155, weighed in at 159, and he won. So my theory that he is doing something inappropriate. I think he's like really small too. He's like 5'5" or 5'4" or something.
He's like a little tank.
Yeah, 5'6", and he can't make 155. Like, what the hell?
That's impressive. I want to know if what I really think is happening.
Yes.
I'm gonna force in my jokes. I fucked up the timing earlier.
Yeah, just crowbar him in. It's fine.
I wonder if Hillary Clinton has a problem with all these Russians coming over here and doing things to America. I mean, if any of them are from Macedonia, they'll be responsible. I fucking forced it. It didn't work at all.
Yeah, it was good try. Macedonia is not Russia, though, is it?
It's one of the satellites that they run. That's where Hillary's been blaming the Macedonians for fake news.
I know a Macedonian.
Yeah, does he hate Hillary Clinton?
It was a she. I never asked.
Do you think it she was does? Your,
I don't know. I don't think she liked me. Anyway.
She probably hates Hillary.
Me and Hillary are just alike. yeah. All right. So
well, your body tried to reject that very idea.
Ah, maybe. So yeah, that was UFC Fight Night 115 in Rotterdam. So there you go, everybody. Good review. What else should we talk about? John Jones was back in the news this past week for no apparent reason whatsoever. This got play on like every major MMA website, whether you're talking Bloody Elbow, MMA Fighting, whatever. I don't think Half Guarded covers it.
Nope.
But it's because it was a bullshit story. The headline reads this: John Jones passed USADA blood test the night of UFC 214. Now, if you remember back a couple weeks prior to UFC 214, he took a urine test and failed for Tarinabol, and that's why he's likely to get suspended and be out a while. Granted, the arbitration and everything still has to go through, but usually if you test positive for a banned substance, you end up getting penalized for it. So we're going to presume he gets suspended. Anyway, this headline comes out 2 weeks after the news of his failure, and it says, John Jones, the reigning UFC light heavyweight champion, passed a post-fight blood screening administered by USADA on July 29th in the aftermath of his victory over Daniel Cormier at UFC 214. The negative test was administered just one day after Jones's infamous July 28th urine screening, which popped positive for the anabolic steroid turinabol. It is nonetheless important to note that USADA blood screenings do not test for turinabol. Thus, the July 29th test would not have discovered any trace of turinabol in Jones's system. And this was an article that I think Helwani put the first article out about this or whatever. And it's just like, it's such a sham of fabulous. A story, because it's a different type of test. It wouldn't show up the turinabol. It's a blood test, and turinabol doesn't show up in blood, I guess, or they don't test for it in blood. It's a urine test. So, like, making this a headline and trying to, like, it was just bizarre to me.
It was amazing when little Johnny came home having taken a math test, and because there were some word problems on there, nobody could understand why. It didn't matter if he read them incorrectly as long as he got the math part right. He wasn't getting tested on the English, you assholes. That kind of worked.
I mean, it's just a weird – how this is getting spun is interesting to me, because he still failed the test.
What's
he failed the test.
Like
that mattered.
They're doing like this weird deal. They were like, the headline sounds like, oh, is there some sort of weird conspiracy type of thing? But by the end of the piece, it's very clear that the author knows that there's no conspiracy here. And yet the piece starts out in a way that very clearly seems to insinuate that Jones is, you know, because of the now infamous and this. It's like, why is it now infamous? Like, that's one of those weird things that when you're writing a straight reporting type of story, it's like a weird editorial that isn't needed. And it kind of reeked early on of, you know, Jones's team saying, hey, you owe us one.
Yeah, I agree totally. But even the, I think it's Andy Foster of the California State Athletic Commission said it seemed odd that he popped on that one test. Like, it's just strange, the whole thing and how it's all going. Obviously, he has his day in court and is going to try and fight it. And God only knows, like, I don't believe it deep down. I think he is a cheater, but who the hell knows? Maybe something weird did happen, but that story is just so misleading and paints it as John Jones is innocent because he passed this test, and he's not.
There's a real easy explanation for, you know, all of this. I mean, Andy Foster, I think, was, I don't know the exact quote there, but it sounds like he too was wrong because he's not me. But yeah, the piss had one thing and the blood had another. They test for different things. Your urine and your blood metabolizing is at a different rate. Plus, most importantly, he failed for the kind of test that you should fail for when you've just been cutting a lot of weight. Everybody always likes to look at these things and forgets about the weight cut. And, like, that to me is where you can get screwed up on getting caught with your drugs. Because the weight cut, you don't know how much is stored in deep fat or something like that. And, you know, it only takes a little bit of sweat to squeeze it out. And next thing you know, oh, yeah, that stuff I took back in June in whatever, Thailand, came back to haunt me and my massive cock that needs so many dick pills.
Foster told MMA Junkie, this entire situation doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't. If you're doing a steroid panel, then this drug is showing up every time. The fact that it didn't show up on July 6th and 7th when he was tested before, that's an indication that he was not on that drug at that time.
No, it's not. It just means he didn't test for it.
Right. At that point, one of two things is probably going on here. He's either extremely careless or he's a cheater. I know he's already been extremely careless once in his career, but he's been careless more times than that.
Oh,
but
my gosh,
that doesn't involve
the dick pill thing is careless.
But none of this makes any sense. That's why I think it's very important that we vet this and look at all the available evidence before we jump to conclusions and hang this guy out to dry, which is fair. You should, like,
that's
you
fine,
and I
yeah.
don't. You and I don't have to be fair, but he should.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's saying one of two things is going on. He's either extremely careless or he's a cheater. Which I don't know, is kind of, I don't want to say inflammatory, but kind of burying him in his own way.
Well,
but he's essentially saying,
yeah, it's prejudging it, and it's dumb because there's no need to say it. Just don't say anything. Just be like, you know, just like the UFC releases those very bland statements for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, you have nothing to gain by in advance saying it could be A or could be B. It's like, what if it's C or D, but because you've already said A and B in public, you're going to look kind of dumb later on. Plus, like, don't tell me that it doesn't make any sense. It makes a ton of sense. He's not careless. He's just a cheater. And I know you can't say that, but don't say that he's not a cheater. Just say nothing. You know, if you have nothing nice to say, just say nothing.
I'm so looking forward to how this all pans out. No matter what it is, you know people are going to bitch about it. If he gets suspended for 4 years, it's going to be like, he was framed. This is bullshit. It's because he was black. Whatever crazy reason people come up with. Or it's going to be like, he gets suspended 6 months and people are going to be like, this guy's been cheating for years. This isn't right. And we've talked about it a number of times on here. Like, you can't like judge a trial or decide like if take the OJ Simpson case or whatever, should he have been found guilty or not, whatever. It's like, you weren't in that courtroom. You don't know what was said. You don't know the lawyers. You don't know all the details. It's the same thing with these stories and the arbitration of these PED violations, where it's like, we don't know all the details. We just know what the punishment was and what was reported and what he popped for and his history. And we kind of base our opinions on that. And you know, whatever the decision is and how it goes down, people are going to be bitching about it one way or another. And I can't wait. Like, I don't care what happens and what his punishment is. I'm just excited to see like the outrage, the full outrage of people when it goes down.
See, now take this feeling you're experiencing, and imagine, yes, I've been feeling this every day since Trump was elected.
Wow, you've been amped up for the last 9 months.
It's been great. But yeah, I'll say this about Jones. I am so excited for this that if I had money and time, I would fly out to California for this hearing, because it would be so awesome. Like, it's got to be... Okay, it's not as good as a Diaz hearing would be, or I guess Anderson Silva's, but you gotta figure this one's gonna be pretty damn good. I mean, whatever bullshit Jones comes up with.
Yeah, it's weird because I know the USADA ones are done behind closed doors, but you gotta wonder if he'll have to go before the California State Athletic Commission, because I was in Anaheim, yeah.
Yeah, because he failed. I thought he failed California's test, not USADA. Because it was right then and there. Either way, it doesn't matter. That test would be under California's jurisdiction, because that's usually how that shit works.
Yeah, sometimes though, don't they just follow what USADA says?
If it's out of competition, they'll go with USADA. If it's in competition, they then have an exercise of direct jurisdiction, and so then it becomes the state doing it.
It's weird because what if like the state decides they want to suspend him for 1 year and USADA wants to do four? It's weird.
Yeah, I think that they're both free to issue whatever they want. And it's up to the other commissions to decide if they're going to go along with something or not. I think this is one of those things where everybody involved is so close. Like, there's just no way. I mean, I could see where there'd be a disagreement on what a punishment would be, but if you're the UFC, you ain't fucking around with that. Like, you don't need that, man. Like, that's some weird shit.
Speaking of steroid cheats, Rory McDonald did a Reddit AMA, like, Ask Me Anything sort of thing with fans. So somebody asked McDonald, do you think Robbie Lawler was on PEDs when you fought? McDonald responded in all caps, I'm convinced he was. He went on to say, just talk a lot of crap about steroid cheats. Somebody asked him about John Jones testing positive. He said, he is shameful, like every other guy that does this crap and hides it, yet gloats during victory. When asked what percentage of people he thought were on PEDs, he said, I have no clue. It's a true shame to see grown-ass men and women doing that, though. So basically, he buried Robbie Lawler and says, says he was convinced that he was on steroids when they fought. And that was that fight where Lawler, like, smashed McDonald's face in and, like, broke his nose. And McDonald's just lying there, like, in a clump of blood. Just a brutal, brutal fight. So, I mean, it's rare that fighters come out and say that so blatantly about another guy, especially when they fought.
Yeah, it's there's never really anything to gain by saying it, because you're gonna, it's always gonna look like sour grapes. And yeah, the point is, it's kind of like, you know, if you thought this was a thing, well, you didn't have to fight him. You know, this is the nature of the beast. Also, you just know this means that McDonald pops in the next month. This is how this always works. That's the true nature of MMA.
Well, so, and he's always had that rumor about him too. You know what I mean?
Giant, like, all the back knee he's had.
Right.
Now, of course, he was like 18, but still.
True. I mean, you don't see a lot of 18-year-olds with that serious of a back knee issue.
No, but and look, I get why he's pissed if he is clean, because everybody is. I'd be pissed too, but I don't know if Lawler isn't like the first guy I would think of when I think of steroids. Like, he's been one of those people whose bodies looked exactly the same his entire career. It's really impressive in many respects. Like, he's never changed. So I don't know. Like, there's probably other guys he's fought in his career that have been on steroids. So blame them first and stop complaining. You lost. You're not a very great fighter.
It's interesting that, I mean, you're saying that too, when Lawler's down to 170 now, and he's smaller than he was for, you know, a good 5-6 years of his career where he fought a middleweight.
Yeah, he's just always been basically the same physique. I think at 185, he didn't really cut any weight. And at 170, you know, he's cutting some, but he's never been a huge, huge 170. And he just kind of looks the same now. He just doesn't have any hair, but he looks better that. Like, he looks better the bald. I don't know what the hell Rory's problem is. Just because a man wants to have a shaved head, you can have a shaved head. Piss off.
maybe the steroids made his hairs fall out.
Propecia and all that are steroids. I mean, you know, Lawler doesn't have to use steroids. It's something.
We've got more information on the Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, like, business info from the show. The gate did not surpass Mayweather versus Pacquiao. It actually fell well short. They did $55.4 million in ticket sales at T-Mobile. And that's confirmed with the Nevada Athletic Commission. The figure is below the record gate from Mayweather-Pacquiao, which generated $72.2 million at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. So, I mean, what is that, like 18, 17 million difference? And that's Mayweather-Pacquiao at the smaller arena. So, I mean, the thing that immediately reminded me of was Brock Lesnar. He would do these huge pay-per-view gates, but never draw that well in Vegas. And I could never figure out why he wasn't more of a draw actually in the city at the arena, but he would do 1.6 million buys on pay-per-view. So just kind of interesting. In the grand scheme of things, 55.4 million is a incredible gate. It's the second biggest gate ever, in the history of Nevada. And I think boxing, period, and obviously MMA too. So, 55 million is not shabby, but it's nowhere near that 72 million either.
No, but, you know, it makes sense to me at some level why there would be a difference as far as live attendance and pay-per-view numbers in that weird way. And it's basically because guys like Conor and Brock, when you get that true crossover person, that's a casual fan. The casual fans don't go and spend, you know, jack up the, you know, $5,000 tickets and things like that. That kind of gate, those gates just, they're just 100% dependent, I think, on how well it's sold to, like, the elites and all that. So I think that's really where that comes from. Otherwise, for Conor McGregor, I'm surprised at the number of people out there who really thought he might win. Trust me, people that think Conor McGregor might win a fight, they don't got $5,000 for anything.
Maybe not. But, I mean, the arena, the T-Mobile, was set up for 17,698 tickets, seats, and they only sold 13,094. So, I mean, there were over 4,500 empty seats. I'm surprised they didn't lower the prices just to fill them in. Like, knock them down to $200. People would buy those at $200.
At that point, though, for them, I don't think it matters.
True.
All they want is, like, they're not really caring about the money, and you're not going to see it on TV anyways, and there you might hurt the little prestige of the if the show of word gets out, oh, they started cutting ticket prices. Like, it's better to just be like, no, ticket sales are going real strong until the very end, and just sell nothing.
Yeah, I guess. I'd rather have that. What would that be? So you sold those 4,000 tickets at $200 a head. That's an extra, I guess, 800,000 in the scheme of things. I guess that's not huge money, but I would take it. As far as the buy rate goes, Espinoza, the Showtime executive there that Connor mocked during those media press conferences, says we are now sort of mid 400 million. If we see the kind of growth that we typically see, then we'll break the pay-per-view record. I don't want to assume we get the typical growth because this is not a typical event. There are many different ways in which this event behaved differently, but we have a very good shot at breaking the record. So not near the gate record, but the pay-per-view buys is right there.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I feel like the numbers should be pretty close. Yeah, there's more people who can get access to these things. But that said, there's so many different ways of getting access to watch this besides traditional pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I don't know if everything always gets counted the same, so we'll see. I gotta thank my throat.
What is it? Then the other big boxing match coming up.
A dwarf dick.
Huh. No, you had dwarves over there. They live in the basement with you?
No, those are the trolls.
Oh, okay.
The dwarves live up on the roof in the attic.
If you had a guess, it must be hot up there. What's the gate so far for Canelo versus Triple G? Also at T-Mobile, September 16th, 20, week and a half.
24 million?
30 million. They're at 30 million. And that'll be the third highest gate in Nevada history behind the two Mayweather fights. So, people are into that fight. People
I think that fight's going to do very well. I think that they're all worried about nothing. Like, after that's kind of passed, like, the whole Conor thing, like, I feel like there's just been enough time and there's something really appealing about a high level fight.
Well, the other thing about it too is it's a different audience. Obviously, it's the hardcore boxing audience, but it's also got the Mexican crowd and wherever Triple G is from, whatever Eastern European country he's from, that'll help too. You know what I mean? They're not pulling from Ireland, and they'll pull from the U.S. a little bit, but it's going to be that Mexican crowd and that European crowd that is going to help boost that thing.
That's what it came to in America. We're just outsourcing our jobs on this one. You got to have the Mexicans and the Europeans sustaining our economy. Way to go, Trump.
Hey, whatever it takes to get the job done, I think. What else is going on? Oh! Speaking of upcoming fights, CM Punk may be making his UFC return soon. His head coach, Duke Rufus, recently put a post up, I think, on, I want to say Instagram. I like to get these things right, but he wrote a message saying, "Great Labor Day training today with Rufus Sport Fight Team. We are pleased to welcome UFC lightweight Lebanese-Canadian John McDessie, and always a pleasure having CM Punk. Both of them are awaiting fight confirmations." First of all, I would be pissed off if I was John McDessie and I was lumped in with CM Punk waiting my fight confirmation, but whatever. I don't know if there's much to that, if Punk's going to get another fight or what's going on, but Duke Rufus is putting it out there.
Hey, I hope there is one. I really do. I've got nothing else in life than to watch these things burn. And last year when Punk came the first time, we just kind of begun the WME era. So I wasn't totally like, well, they're just going to do it anyways. I thought maybe there's some semblance like there had been in the past. But now I'm just like, yeah, they're going to do this. I want to see something really stupid. In fact, I just saw Arnold Schwarzenegger in the crowd. I don't know why he's not in there fighting.
Do you think people care about Punk this time around? Has it been long enough? Do you think the stink of that loss is worn away? Because I like freak show fights. I'm screwed up like that. Like Dada 5000. I would love to see him fight Fedor or something. Like I like a freak show fight. What can I say? But the question is with Punk, he drew people paid to see him fight on that pay per view in Cleveland last year. Will they come back to see him again? I don't know. Maybe I think there might be some curiosity there, and those freak show fights always do better than people think they will.
Yeah, I think that's something to keep in mind. We're in a freak show era, and I think you can get one more. I mean, it'll be tough, but I think you can get one more, and you can just go with, you know, it helps that Mickey Gall has looked good since.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the more Mickey Gall does, the more it's like, okay, Punk lost, but, you know, that dude's beating everybody. Like, you know, he ran through Sage Northcutt. So it's not like, you know, right now, Punk is basically at the level of Sage Northcutt in some people's eyes if they really want to say it, which is stupid. But still, and plus, you know, it's always, oh, you know, my first time. Everybody can excuse your first time doing something. It's when you come back the second time, you fuck it up, then everybody knows, then you're a loser. And that's what's gonna definitely happen.
Any idea who he could fight? Like, who do you put him in there with?
I have no idea. Whoever he can fight legitimately, we don't know who that person is. He's not on anybody's radar.
Well, I'm not saying legitimately.
He may not have ever had a fight. Whoever Punk is at the level to fight, that guy probably doesn't know how to tie his belt properly. That's not as bad as it sounds. A lot of people don't do that. But still, yeah. My point is CM Punk sucks. So instead of something who he could fight, let's just go for something fucking crazy. I don't know what it is. Edson Barboza. Just something really weird. Yeah.
I would do Sage. Fuck it. People would watch that. People would watch Sage Northcutt versus CM Punk. It would be a slaughter, obviously. Punk would get his head kicked off. But people would watch it. And what the hell? Why not get Sage a win? Sort of a name.
Now I really want to see Edson Barboza. I want to see Punk in there with somebody who will hurt him. Like, where there's, like, no question that Punk will get violently injured in the fight. Like, I don't mean that, like, in an ill will. Like, I hope Punk gets hurt. In fact, I don't want him to get hit in the head. I just want him to get kicked in the legs and the body and quit. And quit in a manner that is like, oh, okay, this is real big boy fighting. Fuck this shit. And then he'll go away.
Would Amanda Nunes beat him?
Yeah.
On the feet or on the ground?
Any way she wants.
Really? It's that bad?
It would be a joke. That'd be embarrassing.
Really?
That's a legitimate, I mean, that's a world champion who's that much smaller. Okay. No, like, dude, the skill level between, I mean, yeah.
Wow.
She'd beat the shit out of him.
Wow.
I think there's videos of her in Brazil beating up men.
Okay, I gotta go to the dark web, I guess, to find these things.
Maybe nowadays, because Google censors things like that.
Oh.
I actually don't know what they do, actually. They probably don't.
I do not know either.
I always wonder about that stuff. Like, if you, like, are using a foreign version of YouTube, is it, like, do you get, like, I know you would get different results, but do they have their own standards?
I have no idea. Like, probably. I'm sure the Saudi Arabia YouTube's a little different.
Oh, boy, that's got to be a fun one.
Have you ever seen, like, the album covers retouched up in, like, the Arab countries? Like,
I saw a Shakira one the other day.
Yeah, where she's, like, behind a tree or something. It's supposed to be, like, Adam and Eve, some bullshit like that. Yeah. And like there's like a couple little leaves covering her up and she's naked, but in the Saudi Arabian one or whatever, it's like an entire tree in front of her and you can just see her face barely.
I was surprised that they showed that much of her, to be honest. Although Saudi Arabia, I'll say this, for being a crazy country or whatever, yes, it is, there's something I do somewhat respect about the way those nut jobs do their thing, because they're like super oppressive of their women in the dumb shit ways. But like, you also notice those dudes all dress like fucking jackasses. Like, they're all wearing these weird checkered turban looking things. Like, they're clearly dressed up like assholes. They're not, you know, it's really, like, I always hate when I see it in America, obviously, all the time. You know, a woman in a veil, or in a full hijab, or a niqab, even. And then there's just a dude, and he's walking in jeans and Nikes. I'm like, this is bullshit. But at least in Saudi Arabia, like, you look over and go, okay, she's covered from head to toe, but that asshole's got a picnic table on his head, so. It's a trade-off.
Yeah, it seems plus more equitable.
Plus, they don't really fuck around. Like, if you notice, like, Saudi Arabia, you don't hear a lot about them. Like, you know they're there, but, like, you know, all the people from 9/11 came there, and we all just went, oh, we're going to look the other way on that. And anytime anybody brings it up, it's just like, everybody just kind of goes, eh, but we, no. And it's just like, okay, and maybe it's probably true. It probably is just like a dumb thing where they're not like a real country. Because they're like that, you know, like a weirdo Vatican kind of super duper religious site. Because they're in the one country in all of the Muslim world that nobody will ever attack. Because Mecca is located in Saudi Arabia. So they will never get attacked.
I think it's also a case of there's worse country, like worse, more, like worse dictatorships, worse countries in the world that we tend to focus on. It's like anything. You look at the worst ones, and the one that's 7th, 8th, 9th falls to the wayside when you're worried about, you know, Iraq, Syria, North Korea, all these other countries that are more in the press. If those countries didn't exist, Saudi Arabia would be more in the news, most likely.
Yeah, that's true. And I also think there's something to be said for, you're kind of mentioning it there a little, and obviously Saudi Arabia is really awful. I mean, they're the ones, like, you know, beheading people and stoning people, and like, they're really regressive, even by like nut job standards. But I think what separates them is because there's money involved in the country, the oil, obviously, their people in charge, they can't act like barbarians. Like, they have to at least put on a facade of something nice. And at least with that facade of being respectable come respectable buildings. And, like, it you know, things have to be a certain level of okay for you to be able to fake it as being nice. And that's the difference between them and some, you know, some asshole in Somalia where there is no oil, so if nobody gives a shit, and they just act like butchers. Like, these people would be butchers if we hadn't, essentially, our billionaires civilized their billionaires.
Yeah, there's something, I saw something in Myanmar or something, somewhere, there's something fucked up going on Burma? Right now. Is it Burma?
Or Myanmar, which one?
I think it's Myanmar. Is that what I'm talking about?
Check out, I know what you're talking about, it's either Burma or Myanmar.
I think it's Myanmar. There's something with like 100,000 refugees are all fleeing the country or something.
Yes, I think you should check that out. Because
I'm looking it up, but I've got so many. I've got a new system now for running through all this stuff. Like right before we start the show, I open up like all these windows on Chrome. And
yeah, I know what you're talking about. I mean, I just want to make sure that.
And now Chrome's not responding at all.
I know what you're talking about, and I just don't know if it was Burma or Myanmar, and that's bugging the shit.
It's Myanmar.
It was in Myanmar, not in Burma.
Yes. Maybe there's something in Burma too, but I just Googled Myanmar. It's the first thing that comes up, and they're putting landmines in the paths of the refugees trying to escape.
Wait, what happens if you Google Burma?
My connections, I've got 15 tabs still open. There's a lot of stuff this week I think you're going to like. There's even a follow-up to that woman who lived in Sandwich who got topless and tried to attack the car. Remember we talked about that a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
She's back in the news on Cape Cod.
Yeah, of course.
She's good. Bangladesh summoned the Myanmar ambassador on Wednesday to urge an end to the violence that has engulfed the region and to raise concerns about reports of landmines being laid along the border between the two countries. So I guess people are trying to get from Myanmar into Bangladesh, and
even
Myanmar's put landmines so you can't even escape. At least 146,000 ethnic Muslims have fled to Bangladesh since August. So that's 10 days ago. I don't know why they're saying that, but it's
yeah, you're very. I can't hear you. Your microphone's fucked.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a stupid video in it.
Bangladesh is a country?
I believe so, yes.
I thought it was like a big city in India. It's not, it's a country.
I don't know. Huh. I don't know.
I just want to know about Myanmar and Burma.
I don't know Burma. But yeah, they're trying to get out of there. It's a shit show. Bangladesh, Myanmar. Bangladesh looks like a country to me.
Where's Burma then?
Where's Burma? I don't know. I can't. Do you have a computer?
You're right there. I can't reach.
Where are you?
I'd have to sit up and touch it. And my foot could.
Here, what am I? Is Burma a country? What am I Googling?
I don't know. I just want to know where Burma is. You're the one who said it was either Burma or Myanmar. Now I want.
I said Myanmar. I didn't say anything about Burma. That was you.
No, you said I can't. You couldn't remember if it was Burma or Myanmar.
That's because you confused me. Where is Burma? Burma. Oh, Myanmar and Burma might be the same country.
I've been setting this up for like 5 minutes.
Reworking me?
Yeah, the whole time.
I didn't.
Don't you remember that episode of Seinfeld where he refused to call it Myanmar? It'll always be Burma in my heart.
I don't. So what, Burma's the old name of Myanmar?
Yeah, they just changed it.
Okay, all right, I didn't know that.
I think they changed when it became like a Muslim country, but I always thought it was just weird they changed the name. I'm like, you can't change the name of your country. Like, that's just what you're called. Like, you don't get to choose. I don't think you really get to choose what you're called. Like, after a certain time, like, if England said call something else, I'd be like, no, you're England. I'm not going to call you Intergalactic Spaceship Joe. You're England.
So is Bangladesh really a country?
Yeah, it is. I looked that up.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Okay, so we're good. Anyway, they're having problems worse than Saudi Arabia, we think.
Yeah.
Oh, I had a good segue and transition, but somehow we lost it. We were going to move from CM Punk going to UFC to Ronda Rousey going to WWE. So you go from one person who's really successful at pro wrestling being really shitty at MMA, somebody who was really successful at MMA going into WWE and seeming really bad at it. She cut this promo with Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir. I think it was just on WWE.com following like the Mae Young Classic or something. And it was really bad and she seemed super awkward. And then like Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. I think Bayley came out and confronted her. Basically, Rousey said, you name the time, you name the place. And then they kind of just walked away. It was terrible. Did you happen to see this?
No, I did not. I saw that she was there, but I didn't click on the link because I thought, I don't give a shit. Like, although I should kind of do a little because I'm curious to see how Rousey's life continues to suffer. Less because, let's face it, of the two of them, right now, CM Punk is overall more successful because his pro wrestling was better than her MMA. Because at least people still want him to come back to pro wrestling.
Ooh. True.
And nobody looks back on his career and goes, "Well, that was a bit of a fraud, wasn't it?"
You should watch this clip. It's like 50 seconds long, and it's like something. Like, worse than Ring of Honor or any indie you'll ever see. It's just poorly done. The acting's terrible. Like, they're smirking through it and, like, almost borderline laughing. It's just very poorly done. I would recommend checking it out.
I saw a still of them, and Rhonda had this look on her face, like she was, like, the other two didn't look like they were even trying. She looked like she was trying, but it was, like, so the most blatant person playing pro wrestler.
She seemed super nervous, which is kind of weird because she's been in front of huge crowds and done so many interviews and been on every goddamn talk show there is in front of millions of people. But I think, like, she's been a pro wrestling fan for a few years anyway. She's been going to PWG and Shayna Baszler, obviously. She's friendly with her. But she seemed super nervous. And I kind of got the same feeling when she was in the ring with Rock at Mania. I felt like she was kind of nervous, too, when she got in there and had to kind of go back and forth with Stephanie a little. I felt like she had nerves. And she seemed like she had a little bit of stage fright in this backstage segment for WWE.com. Like, it just caught me off guard. And I don't think she's much of an actress in that regard.
Well, that's saying a lot, actually. Now, I think some of it's probably just, she doesn't know what to do. Like, with the interviews, she, you know, since she's been a little kid, she's been doing interviews. Mm. And obviously competing and fighting, like, the nerves of that can go away pretty quick once you're actually in there doing it. But with pro wrestling, even though, you know, I think some of it's also she feels the pressure of, it seems like she should be good at it, because she's very athletic and she's a fan. And so you have this extra pressure of don't look stupid physically, but she has no idea what to do. She doesn't know how to stand because it's an unnatural way to be. You know, pro wrestlers are just weirdos. Very few people have conversations where they just stand around in their underwear in a circle in a ring and talk. Like, that's a really weird way to go through your life. So, yeah, and, you know, she's trying her best and whatever, she sucks. She's terrible at acting. That includes all kinds of acting, and pro wrestling, in fact, is a kind of acting. So she can only really be herself. So, yeah. Amanda, you're gonna have to be you. Your dream of being somebody else and not having to experience all that trauma over and over again of losing your dad, of all the boys that cheated on you, of all the men that fucked you over. Well, no. Sorry, Rhonda, but you're fucked.
The rumor is she might have a match at Survivor Series, a 4-on-4 match with the Four Horsemen versus whoever the hell I just said, Charlotte Flair, Bayley, Becky Lynch, and obviously somebody else. Maybe Sasha Banks is the other name I'm seeing. Seems kind of weird to do it at Survivor Series as opposed to Mania, but I guess when everybody pays $10 a month for the network, it doesn't really matter what show it's on. I don't know.
Well, there's also the fact that they probably got to get this over with because, you know, Lil Ron is going to get knocked up soon. You know, she's going to want that Christmas baby. So you got to get this done. She can't be jumping around a ring in April.
Okay.
I turned hillbilly on that for some reason.
Does her wrestling interest you at all?
Yeah, I'll watch it. It's a freak show.
Do you think people, coming off the two losses, people care and want to see her? Is she totally washed up? Or
she's such a star. Like, it's pro wrestling. Pro wrestling fans as a whole have that inferiority complex where you get a real star in your presence, you're going to go, oh, okay, we're going to give that one a shot. I mean, look at Brock.
Mm.
And like his profile went up so much because he was revealed as being legit.
Yeah.
God, I wish you would come back. Fuck you, John Jones, you asshole.
That would be kind of interesting. If Ronda actually trained and could wrestle a little bit, if they could make her like a female version of Brock, just go out there and beat the shit out of people and yell. You know what I mean? Granted, she doesn't have the charisma, maybe, but it'd be interesting to have her come back every, you know, a few times a year, have a couple matches, beat the crap out of somebody, destroy a car. That sort of stuff. Make her the female Brock.
What's sad is, you know, things that Brock Lesnar has done as a pro wrestler. Destroy a car. Because we live in a world where that's what pro wrestling is.
I just remember him tearing that door off the side of it. Obviously, it was gimmicked, but he tore the side of the door off the car and chucked it into the crowd. And it, like, almost hit a little kid or something. Do you remember that?
He's a monster. He really is. Like, he's just a fucking monster. That's actually one of the things. I mean, look, I actually do agree with you. I think Ronda and pro wrestling, I mean, financially, if you can ever make it work, makes a lot of sense. I think she'd enjoy it. I think she'd probably do okay.
It's better than her fighting. I don't want to see her. I don't want to see her in the cage. I really don't. It's just
she,
like,
comes with built-in spots. You know, she already has a finisher, and she already can just do throws. So she's already doing pro wrestling stuff in a many respects. And it's the women. You just keep it kind of short. And yeah, she could absolutely be. It'd be interesting. They could almost use her and Brock on every other month to always have like a kind of a big name person there. Mm. No, she wouldn't be Brock. That's part of the problem, is that Brock is so special and that he can just, you know, work like nobody's business. And he's not just, you know, legit like she's legit. He's legit in that way that everybody who's ever watched pro wrestling was told, this is what the baddest man looks like.
Right.
And it turned out to be this frothing animal.
Ronda just seems like the type, though, that won't want to be embarrassed and will train and try and get it down if she's actually going to do a match. Because, like, if you're going to PWG and you're a fan like that, you're not going to want to embarrass yourself and have a shit match on pay-per-view, like, in front of a live crowd with, you know, 15,000 people and on the network. She's not the type that'll... I don't think she's the type that'll phone it in. They might rehearse it and give her some spots and play it safe and make sure she doesn't embarrass herself, but you know she's not going to go in and make a joke of it and not try like some celebrities have in the past.
Oh, no, I think she would give her all on it. I think she'd do well, too. But, of course, there's a big difference between doing everything for, like, one match and then devoting herself and doing it semi-full-time because, you know, anybody can kind of be coached through one match. I think everybody kind of knows that. But if you actually want to kind of get over in the long run, you're going to need to be able to show that you can work on some level. They can't just gimmick and carry her for everything. But, yeah, for one off, for sure.
Yeah. Well, that'll be something to look forward to. Somebody else who is making a career change is Ben Askren. He recently announced that he's going to be retiring. He's was former Bellator welterweight champion and the one, whatever they're calling it, one championship welterweight champion as well. He's retiring at 33. His last match is going to be, I believe, in October against Shinya Aoki.
No, it's not a real fight.
No, it's Aoki.
No, I thought he was fighting some other dude, like in an actual fight.
No.
The Aoki thing, I thought that was a gimmick. I thought that was a grappling match.
No, it's an MMA fight in one.
Fuck's sake.
You don't like that fight?
Ay, ay, ay. Come on, Aoki's like a freaking string bean at 155, and Askren's a giant man. He's like 185 pounds.
Yeah, well, I think they said no more weight cutting or something. So, yeah, I think he does fight at 185, yeah.
He's just a giant dude who's really... Oh, he's going to rip his head off. He actually might, like, get to knee on belly, really pry him down, maybe put, like, 1 foot on his shoulder, and rip his head off of the body. He's going to pop it off like he's MMA's Gallagher.
So you think Askren will retire undefeated then?
Yeah, it'll be right up there with Floyd Mayweather, man.
It's kind of similar. Do you really think this is it for him? I mean, it's interesting because in some ways he's the type of guy, it's like, geez, he never made it to UFC. I would have liked to see him against some of those welterweights and see how he did. Granted, I don't think he would have fared that well. But at the same time, he beat every guy he ever fought, usually in dominant fashion. Like, he had that win over Koreshkov in Bellator, where he just wrecked him, just destroyed him for, I want to say it went to decision, but for 5 rounds, just rode him, landed punches, didn't get hit in a couple rounds at all, looked really, really good. And you always wonder, how would he have done against, you know, your Robbie Lawlers, Rory McDonalds, GSP, Johnny Hendricks, that whole era of guys, Condit. Like, I would have liked
lost,
to see,
but yeah.
I think he would have lost as well, but you don't know for sure. So in one way, it's kind of like a disappointing career, but at the same time, you look back, he probably made pretty good money going to one. He made decent money in Bellator, and he almost never got hit. So at the same time, you're like, maybe Askren did it right.
It's interesting. It's really weird because he's almost like the only person that could do what he's done, where you're good enough that some money mark will probably give you some money, but you're not good enough that the UFC is going to beat down your door, and you're also not really engaging enough that, like, the hardcore fans are ever going to really get behind you. Like, usually, you know, you get these guys with these long runs. The fan, you know, it's very natural. People go, oh, yeah, this guy can really beat everybody in the UFC, but you never really heard people talk about, like, oh, well, you know, that he's a welterweight champion, but he hasn't fought Ben Askren. Like, even if Askren showed up, people would be like, wonder how you'd do against, like, number 10.
Right.
And yet, yeah, he's made all this money, and he clearly, he's a different type of dude. You know, he still wrestles. He loves his wrestling. He runs wrestling camps with his brother. They got a couple wrestling academies in the Midwest. I think he's just a dude that likes to train and keep in shape, and this is a way for him to do that. Now he's probably looked at it and go, hey, I got enough money, I'm out.
You know what I realized Askren was odd? He was still in Bellator, and he was talking about, like, frisbee golf. He was, like, nationally ranked, like, in the top 10 for frisbee golf. I'm like, what the hell? Like, that's such an odd thing for, like, this elite wrestler to get into. Like, I don't know about you, but I just associate frisbee golf with, like, potheads. Well, like, you go out, you smoke weed, and you throw a frisbee around.
It's disc golf is your first mistake. And here's the thing, that they get upset about that. The guy I was friends with in college was a big disc golf player. They don't call it frisbee golf. They definitely don't call it frolf. They call it disc golf. And honestly,
how slanderous of me.
I know. I actually played it a lot. It was okay. Like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Right.
I'm sure if I had done drugs and drank back then, it would have been awesome. As it stands, I was like, eh, all right. But if you've ever been disc golf, especially in the Midwest, every single guy out there looks like Ben Askren.
Okay.
Like, just white dudes with shaggy hair and khaki shorts and flip-flops. And they're just out there, and they're loving life, man. There's just like this sea of Midwestern Matthew McConaughey types. And that's just what Ben Askren is. He's just a Midwestern Matthew McConaughey doing MMA, and that's a lot of M's.
So you think this is it? You think you'll have – he's 33. But, I mean, it's not like he's banged up or been knocked out or even has a loss. Do you see him getting a run in the UFC, or is this truly it?
I think he's done.
Okay.
I also feel like he's religious-y.
Really?
Like, not like he preaches it, like, big, but I feel like he's one of those guys that could just be Mormon or something. And like, like Steve Young, like, you'd never hear about it a lot, but you also realize, like, he'd never actually really gotten any trouble.
Right.
You know, you never heard, like, yeah, he kind of did a little bit of shtick, but you never heard about him drinking or doing drugs or running around on women. He was never in the news unless he was fighting. Like, that's really, you know, a very even-keeled, boring dude. So I feel like, he likes to just be with his family, and maybe he's boring. Or maybe he's a Matt Hughes type, where he's secretly a dick and he's banging lots of chicks.
We don't know for sure. All we know is his last fight appears to be against Shinya Aoki in an MMA fight, a real fight. Huh. A guy who did get into trouble is Bellator veteran Sergio Da Silva. He was arrested for alleged bank robbery in New York. Apparently, he stole more than $45,000 from the Astoria City Bank in August. Have you ever heard of this story?
No.
Basically,
I've never heard of this Astoria.
This in Astoria.
I've never heard this Astoria, about the Astoria bank robbery. Yeah.
This was the New York Post described him as a lousy MMA fighter.
I love the Post.
Yeah, it said, the bank robbery happened around 9 a.m. on August 27th. It was committed by a man dressed in dark pants, a black hooded sweatshirt, and a bandana covering the lower half of his face. Kind of the typical robber outfit, but the robber reportedly told the three bank tellers...
he's going to punch a Nazi.
Yes. Antifa. The robber reportedly told the three bank tellers... the three bank tellers who were working at the time that he had a gun in his coat pocket and he would shoot everybody if they did not hand over the bank's money. He fled after the tellers gave him $45,964 in cash. On the 30th,
he would shoot everybody.
Yeah, like, not just in the bank, just everybody in the world.
Like, there's like 20 people in the bank. I just picture him with like a handgun. I'll shoot everybody. I'm going to get each and every one of you. I will chase you down the street. And I will shoot you. Thanks for the $46,000.
On August 31st, De Silva was arrested at his home, which is less than a block away from the bank where the robbery took place. Police claim they identified De Silva as the culprit due to fingerprints left at the scene, which they matched to a prior arrest of his.
Also, he kept walking by it because he was going to the bathroom because he lives so fucking close.
Yeah, I wouldn't pick a... the closest bank to my house to rob.
Although I guess I could see it, like, you just studied it all day. Like, I could definitely see it. If I lived across the street from the bank, I would spend all day thinking about how to rob it. I would be looking at it over time. I'd be like, I would just keep a mental note, like, oh, the Brinks truck comes at that time, huh? And I'd be like, how many guys do they have? Oh, I wonder what's different that day. Like, I would absolutely just have it in the back of my head.
So, on the 31st, De Silva was arrested at his home. Then on September 1st, somehow he got on Facebook to share his side of the story. He wrote, "Crazy day to say the least. I am truly overwhelmed by all the love and support. As much as I would love to speak more about the allegations, my legal team has rightfully advised me against discussing any details until the case is over. I'm ready to cooperate and clear up my name. God gives his toughest battles to his strongest warriors."
Crazy day, guys. Like, oh, crazy day. Oh, that's kind of an understatement, isn't it? You're not really prepping people properly. Hey, crazy day. Oh, yeah, what happened? Did you get a 2-for-1 special to sale at the store? No. Did your cousin give birth? No. Yeah, what happened? I robbed a bank that I got arrested for it. Crazy day, man. Totally fucking out of character.
You also wrote, "All I ask is for everyone to please respect my family during this difficult time. Also, please understand my distance. I do not have my cell phone. Should have it back in the next few days."
Okay, that's probably like a translation deal.
maybe like it's a Portuguese.
Give my distance. Yeah, whatever. Like it's like probably like, "Sorry, I'm away" or something like that.
Yeah.
"Sorry, I'm not home right now." But yeah, it's.
I'm thinking it might be English as a second language issue, but
yeah, it could be.
The best thing, I was reading this on what fucking site is this? Bloody Elbow, and it said down at the bottom, the computer froze up. Hang on. De Silva is considered innocent until proven guilty. Period. That's how the article ends.
Wait, did they actually write the word period?
No, but
that'd be even better.
That would be better. So that's an odd way to end this whole thing, because they didn't, like, accuse him of actually doing it. And obviously he's considered innocent until proven guilty. It was just an odd closing line to this story.
Where was
he arrested? Astoria.
Where is this? Is that New York?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Never mind.
What?
I mean, okay, he's innocent until proven guilty.
Queens. It's in Queens.
Yeah. I mean, he is brown, so that's not, you know, I don't think he's got a big hope here. It's America, after all.
At least he didn't get shot.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking that if he was in Brazil, like, maybe they're not innocent until proven guilty in Brazil or something.
That could be true. Like in his homeland, they handle it differently.
Yeah.
That
not even like in a totally negative way. I'm not impugning them per se.
Yeah.
I mean, they are inferior, no doubt, as is their savage way. But after all, this is a man who just wants to clear his name. This is all a misunderstanding. It's just somebody with the same name as him, who looked like him, who lived in the same house as him, and had a gun like he did, and who walked into a bank like he did. Totally different guy. Totally different guy.
Yeah, he must have been framed like John Jones.
This shit's everywhere, man. You know what? Did he check? Was Melky Kawhi following him around? Huh? Huh? Was he?
I don't even think that's close to how you pronounce that guy's name. It's Melky, Kawa.
Melky. I always thought it was Kawhi for some reason.
It's K-A-W-A. Melky Kawa.
Kawa.
Do you know he's trying to, like, manage football players now, like NFL players?
I just fucked it up. I should have said Ali, not Melky. It's a way better joke.
Ali has issues, too.
No, because he's the one following around what's-his-face.
Oh, what the fuck is that guy's name? Russell. Something Russell.
Yeah, something, yeah, Russell Doan or something like that.
Russell Doan. Doan was one of the cheerleaders in WWE.
Yeah, not Russell Doan. Whatever his name is.
Mike Russell, I think, is his name. We're just going to go with Mike. That's a common, boring name that everyone has.
Oh, don't they ever.
Speaking
of Brazilian... says Matthew.
Mike is way more common than Matthew.
I bet not over time. I bet not historically.
My name's got something to do with the Bible, I think.
Yeah. It's part of the Bible. It's a big one.
Speaking of people who should maybe read the Bible, Diego Brandão had a strange weekend. You remember he got arrested for, like, beating the shit out of somebody a while ago?
Wasn't it, like, his girlfriend?
No, there was something in New Mexico, and remember they asked him if it was, like, John Jones's gun he had or something?
Yeah, there was something weird. And then when he got cut from the UFC, like, right away.
Yeah. So, but he's back in the news again anyway. Like, the most famous thing I remember about Brandão is that he got knocked out by Conor McGregor. So, essentially...
And when he fought, what's his face right now in the finals of The Ultimate Fighter, he did one of the coolest, like, back takes and everything.
That I don't remember. But anyway, he was arrested for assault and left UFC. But he's been competing for EFN Fight Nights Global in Russia for the last year. If you're fighting in Russia, things aren't going well for you. He won his first two bouts there and was matched up with Ahmed Aliyev for his third fight. The video is available.
When they say that, like, he's fighting for EFN in Russia,
yes,
it doesn't sound like... You know, you would say, like, he's fighting for Bellator. It'd be like, you know, he's fighting in Bellator. I get this, even though I know he's still in Brazil, probably training, it does have this impression in my head of he goes over to Russia and they don't let him leave. Like, somebody took his passport and he just has to fight now.
Like, he's stuck there forever?
I absolutely think there's a strong possibility that's how one of Putin's buddies is running that show.
Well, they might ship him back to Brazil after this fight over the weekend. Essentially, in the second round, both the guys are on the ground, and Brandão is on the bottom, has the Ahmed Aliyev, in his guard, and bites his ear. So Aliyev gets up and headbutts Brandão in the chest.
As one does.
And then... The ref separated them. I don't think the ref saw the bite, but he saw this headbutt. And as the ref goes to separate him, Brandão just throws his, like, upkick to his face, like, brutal, right in the face. And then, like, as soon as Brandão stands up, he walks over to the door of the cage and asks to be let out. They won't let him out, so he jumps the cage and runs into the crowd and walks out.
You're telling me he upkicked, was it the referee?
No, he upkicked Aliyev, the guy who was fighting.
He upkicks the man in the head, and is surprised when he can't just casually stroll out. And so he then says, oh, fuck it, and absconds by escaping the cage like a dastardly pro wrestling heel.
Well, in the meantime, all the fans are throwing shit into the cage, too. Like, you should watch this. It's worth watching. There's, like, bottles. It's like when Hulk Hogan turned heel.
Shit, that's just on Fight Pass.
It may be. I just saw a video on
yeah,
that.
But... I totally watched that after I finished watching Nogueira beat Bob Sapp. And my word. I mean, my gosh, the pounding Nogueira took in this fight is just so disgusting.
Yeah. Japan.
Like, seriously. He took way more punishment in basically every minute of this fight than Conor McGregor did in the totality of his fight with Floyd.
Yeah, I bet. Well, you got to consider Mayweather hitting you versus roided up Bob Sapp, too.
Prime Bob Sapp, man. This is one of the best shows. One of the best things I ever saw, Bob Sapp. The era of Bob Sapp when he just...
What Pride was that? What number was that?
Wasn't Pride, it was Pride and K1 Shockwave.
Oh, special show,
August of 2002 for this one. And, that was, this is a big deal. I remember I left for, to go back to school my second year of undergrad, and it was, I left like the day before the show aired, so my brother had to order it, and they then shipped me the videotape. The dipshit forgot to record like the first half hour, and my dad somehow labeled it. It was an actual VHS tape.
Yeah, sure.
My dad labeled it Mike's Kickboxing. And that was always like a great tape for me because it had this fight on it. I mean, it's such a great card, anyways. But
yeah.
Damn it, man! I mean,
Nogueira won with it by armbar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember back. Yeah, because I didn't see that when it happened. I remember reading about it in it was probably Observer. But I saw a lot of that Pride stuff later because they released like I don't know if it was a box set, but like a whole bunch of DVDs of the old Pride stuff. And I can remember watching those fights then. But pretty soon thereafter, you could start finding the stuff online too. It's like we obviously take it for granted today, but it used to be hard to see that stuff. It's like now you can see New Japan on Access every week and all this Japanese stuff and find all these fights on YouTube or whatever. But back then it took some effort.
Oh yeah, I mean I didn't see anything. I mean, there was no real online video when I was in college. That the stuff was just wasn't fast enough. Like YouTube, I think YouTube may have started like 2005 or something. Like I think I was done with college or right there about.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of it was literally just buying actual God, I'm so fucking old that VHS tapes still were around. Like, and they were a viable medium.
What's funny, my kids will never see a VHS tape ever in their lives. You know what I mean? Like, DVDs are outdated now. Like, we buy some here or there just so we can have them and watch them, but, like, that whole age of going to a store and buying a tape or buying an album, that is dead.
Oh, yeah, I said it to my brother the other day. I asked him, did you buy Wonder Woman?
Ah!
Because it's normal. A great, great movie.
No, it's normal for two 30-year-old men to have that conversation.
Hey, one of us is married, at least. Anyway,
for now.
We spent the whole weekend playing basically with a bunch of, like, 6- and 4-year-old girls.
Ooh.
They're my cousin's kids. Let's stop it, everyone. Stop it. Behave. But, yeah, I mentioned him, like, did you get it? He goes, I didn't think it was out yet. I go, they have a digital only exclusive on iTunes for 3 weeks, and then you get on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Because, like, he's not big into... If he's going to buy something, he always wants a physical thing. And I used to like that, but I really, really like the versatility of having everything digital.
Mm.
I mean, I know I'm putting my trust in the wrong overlord's hand, but I like the cloud to the extent I know how to use it. It's great. It's really, really cool. Like, I love working with Google Documents. I think it's just great that I don't have to worry about bringing files with me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Times change and you gotta adapt, and there's something weird about Google technically having access to all your shit, but at the same time the convenience of it seems so overrided, and I just don't think Google cares about any of my shit. So
I think it's kind of like artificial intelligence in that it will be abused. There's just no way. All of history tells me that every movie I ever saw tells me that this Google Corporation has existed forever, and they get all your data, and they do something evil with it. They're going to do it. If they don't, the government's going to do something with it. That's inevitable. Just like artificial intelligence will inevitably kill us all. But there's a point before artificial intelligence kills us, it's going to be great. The robots won't have, like, the full sentience, so they're going to be doing all the jobs for us, and it's going to be wonderful. We're going to have free food, free everything. I'm just going to sit around and do anything you want. I think I'm going to get in that generation, so I'll avoid the killer robot thing. I think this is the same way with Google. I'm going to avoid when they go totally evil. Like, they're already, you can see the cracks. It's starting to crack already a little bit, but I think I've got enough years in me to enjoy it and be like, eh, I had access to all my writings everywhere. It was great.
But to me, it's always a matter of like I it's not like I've got a ton of money or anything interesting or anything secret I'm hiding. You know what I mean? So it's like, they're not going to give a shit about me. So
no, I don't really say about that. The one thing that was kind of one of those, oh boy, like, this is real for everybody, not just like a couple of trolls online, was when Google momentarily kicked Jordan Peterson off of YouTube. And Jordan Peterson is he's become a favorite of kind of conservatives right now, but he's a tenured professor at the University of Toronto, and he's been a big outspoken critic of the new pronouns and all that shit. Either way, one of his videos that he posted got flagged, and YouTube/Google shut down his account. Well, that also shut down his Gmail.
And
he's like, I lost for a while there. He didn't have access to 10 years worth of email.
Shit, yeah.
And that's when you realize, like, it's really, like, stuff like that makes me think, you used to have to back up all your material on different drives. Now I have to back it up on different companies, because that was scary when I'm like, oh, one dumb thing said or one something misinterpreted, and that's a lot of shit.
Yeah, it's weird too, though, because I always laugh when people complain about Gmail or whatever. I'm like, it's free. You don't pay anything for it, and you get all this information and can store all this shit on it for no money at all. People are like, I don't like how the attachments look on Google or Gmail. It's like, shut the fuck up. You didn't pay for it. It's a free service that you get and did nothing for. That always just drives me crazy.
I think people don't really fully appreciate what free means. Like, we live in a society full of really dumb people. I think I just got louder, by the way, on my microphone.
Okay.
I don't care.
Should I talk louder?
Nah. I didn't get that much louder. But no, people don't understand what free means. Like, they really do think that you can just get shit for free. Like, no, everything has a cost. We used to understand that as a people. Like, I think that's kind of the necessary component that's missing from having, like, a successful type of socialism. Is when you have people that understand nothing is free, they know, okay, somebody's got to work. Even if it's not them, at least they appreciate that somebody did something to bring your potatoes to the table or something. But when you have people just think everything is free and they don't understand opportunity costs and actual costs or anything like that, they just think, oh, yeah, I'll just get it for free. It doesn't matter. It's like, no, you pay for it with your ads or, in our case, access, or you don't get every super fancy thing you want. Although, I don't know what people want. It's your fucking email. It's just, can you say hi? See the attachment. You have 15 other ways to communicate with somebody. You're not using your email unless you're 80. Emails become the new handwritten letter.
Yeah, it's slowly died. I know as far as, like, marketing and stuff, like, I get so many emails. I mean, a lot of times I unsubscribe, but sometimes I kind of want to see them. But it's like a lot of open rates for these companies, whether it's like retail or whatever it might be, it's like 2 or 3%. Like, you can send them out because it's cheap and it doesn't really cost you anything. It's better than traditional snail mail, like through the postal service. but at the same time, nobody opens them anymore. And when email first started getting going, people were like, ooh, they would check their email and want to see what they have. And it was like this fun thing, and 90% of them would be opened, and you could actually make some money via email marketing. But those days are long gone for most companies.
Yeah, man, that first couple of early adopters, especially the first people to figure out some of the scams, oh, man, they might have just it must have been a golden age. They must have just been like, this is beautiful. This is the greatest age of scamming. There's just like, I bet the entire fucking domestic product of Nigeria just shot through the roof for about 3 months. And they thought, this is it. We've figured out a way to get our reparations from the white man. We've done it. And then we all just said, oh, that doesn't sound right. And now they're just scamming grandmas.
We never finished the Brandao story, by the way. Essentially, the ref tried to get Brandao to stay, but he jumped the cage and left. Eventually, they were able to coax him back into the cage, and he found out that the ref had awarded Aliyev a TKO victory. The ref was apologetic, but Brandao was the one that walked out, so there wasn't much he could do.
Is that a TKO?
That's what I was going to ask you.
Submission, maybe?
If there's a fight where a referee splits the two guys up, and then one of the guys gets hit with an illegal up kick and leaves the cage, should he lose by TKO?
Well, he did the up kick.
Correct.
Brandao did the up kick.
Yes.
So, yeah, he could lose.
But it would be
TKO
like
TKO doesn't sound right at all.
Right. Or it's a DQ loss, you can't leave the cage in the middle of a fight, but TKO does not make sense. No one was knocked out.
I can see submission, because you're quitting in a way. Fine.
Okay.
I can see disqualification, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I can see no contest, because you just go, I don't know what to do. I think, really, of every possible option, TKO is the worst one.
I agree.
Outside of like calling for a stretcher for a knockout or something. Yeah, that's the worst possible decision made by the ref. Way to go, Japan.
It was Russia.
Yeah, it's all the same Wild West bullshit that I love right here in Pride.
Paige Van Zandt was back in the news this week. I know you like to talk about her. She was doing an interview with old Ariel Helwani talking about why she was going to fight at 125 next. And she claims that she has passed out numerous times trying to make 115 pounds, which is, what is that? I can't remember.
Flyweight?
The straw weight limit.
Flyweight, yeah.
Oops. Yeah, and she's going to be fighting flyweight now. And she says this has happened multiple times during training, and once she had to call Uriah Faber to come save her.
That's really weird.
She walks around it. She's much bigger than people actually think, and she normally walks around at 137 and was cutting down to 115.
Here, I can accept that. I can accept that. I just, you know, TV is just different. You don't always know. Athletic people can always be deceptively large. The fact that she's had to call Uriah for help, that's weird. Like, I could find, she's cutting weight, she passes out from hard weight cut. That happens. If you're doing it a lot, that's not good, but it still makes sense. But what does she, like, get home and she's just passing out? What the hell is she doing? Like, she's getting lightheaded from what, training so much? And then, oh, Uriah, help me. I'm falling asleep against my will. Help
me. Or maybe he was cornering her and he was there for the weight cut or whatever.
I guess.
Essentially, she said, it's a big cut for me. I'm a lot heavier than people realize. I was honestly killing myself for this sport. In my last, I want to say, 2 to 3 fights, I've passed out in my bathroom. This last one, I passed out and had the doctors almost not clear me for the fight. My parents had never seen me cut weight, but they watched this one and they told me if I ever did that again, they were going to disown me. They thought I'm killing myself for this, and it's not worth it. It's not worth hurting myself physically for a sport. yet she's in a sport where she gets punched in the face. The 125 division is finally getting built, so it just made sense for me to try it out. I'm moving up. I'm a big advocate for body positivity, and I was putting myself through an eating disorder to make weight, and it became not fun for me anymore. I hate cutting. I hated the process. Obviously, passing out on your bathroom floor is not fun because you're dying in a bathtub.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is fucking magnificent.
How so?
She's not going to do it anymore because mommy and daddy said not to.
Yeah, they were mad at her.
You're a fucking cage fighter and you're listening to mommy and daddy. It's not like they're, you know, they're your badass, like, you know, tough, you know, training parents who've been there or whatever. Like, this is like, you know, you're scared parents like, oh, they saw me just cutting weight and never again will my daughter do that. But then just to make sure that she wants to throw in some sort of connection to let everybody know that she's a little victim. I'm an advocate for body positivity. Okay, what? You weren't cutting weight for aesthetic reasons. Don't give me this like, I had an eating disorder to make weight. No, you didn't. That's not a disorder. You could clearly stop that. You clearly, not only that, you wanted to not do that. You wanted to eat. You're complaining about how you could not eat. A disorder is you can't help the way you do these weird shit. You sit there, trust me, bulimics aren't happy, or anorexics aren't happy to vomit. They're not sitting there going, oh yeah, that hits the spot. They're not big fans of their fucking burnt out teeth and destroyed vocal cords. You fucking twit.
You know what I was thinking that wasn't mentioned in any of this? You know how you talk about, like men fighters? When they get older, a lot of times they'll move up in weight because whatever, you get heavier as you get older.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she started fighting when she was, like, 18 and Invicta, and she's 23 now. Like, is it really that surprising that she's having a harder time making 115? It kind of just makes sense, but I haven't seen that mentioned anywhere, or that just like that. Immediately, that's what I thought. My gosh, she's moving up. She's getting a little older. That's not that weird. But like the women's game is so young, and most of them, I feel like, are older when they get into the UFC. They're not coming in at 19 years old, and they can't get in the tough house because they're not old enough to drink. Most of them are coming in their mid-20s and have probably got their weight and have fought enough where they know what's the right weight class for them. Paige is a different case, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, she's young. She's getting bigger. I think a lot of us are surprised because she does look skinny and small.
Mm.
But, you know, here again, that's kind of a perception thing. You don't really see that many, like, half-naked women of a certain, like, where you know exactly how much they weigh. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you see, like, women in bikinis, you really, like, nobody ever sees a swimsuit model and thinks, I bet they weigh about 133 pounds. Like, you just don't do it. Whereas, like, men were a lot more used to their weight mattering. Because, you know, everything with men is so oriented around sports. All football, you know how big a linebacker should be and blah, blah, blah. So we don't really know how big women are, I think. So I look at her and I go, she looks really small, but maybe she's not. Maybe Michelle Watterson's the real 115-pound size and Paige is big. And I'm fine with her. I'm glad she's moving. I think, again, perception's weird because she's not been all that great at 115. But we've seen people move up. I hope she does well. And stops having such a tough life.
It's kind of an odd thing that you just said that we're more aware of men's weight, but in society, no one really cares what a man weighs, and you always hear about women like would never say their weight or want you to know how much they weighed. It's like this taboo topic that you can't even talk about. It's just kind of funny, a weird. I don't know, cultural thing, I guess we have.
Yeah, what kind of goes along with that is, I think a lot of women, they don't want to talk about how much they weigh, but again, I don't know. Like, I don't know what you should, like, a friend of mine, like, my whole life, I always thought she was really skinny and small, so if somebody said, like, how much you weigh, I would say, like, I don't know, 115 pounds? 120? Yeah. I don't know. And she's like, oh, I'm like, she's like 140, 135, 140. She's like, you know,
and some of you, she's had a kid since, but still, I'm like, oh, like, that's, you're bigger? Huh? I'm like, you're not fat. I'm gonna call you fat. So,
yeah, it's interesting. This weekend we've got UFC 215 on September 9th, Saturday night. This is taking place in Rogers Place in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. If you remember back, Edmonton was in the news a little bit because that was the city where Tim Hay got knocked out and was pronounced brain dead after his fight, then died a couple days later. The Edmonton Commission had come under some fire for the way they sanctioned that fight and allowed him to fight with like five knockouts in a couple years. So apparently the UFC has taken out extra insurance for the fighters on the show because they're wary of the commission.
Yeah, I saw something like that posted on Twitter, and I presume it's accurate because why would someone on Twitter lie?
Well, I think it was Mike Russell again.
I think it was, He lives
in Canada, and he's not a fan of Ali Abdelaziz or this Edmonton Commission.
Yeah.
I don't think MMA is like his full-time gig at all. I think he's got like a full-time job and does this on the side and just kind of gets into stories that interest him. Mm-hmm. And he's one of those guys who will call out Ariel and say that MMA journalism is kind of bullshit, so I respect him for that, but
yeah.
As far as like verifying what he's written, nobody else is really covering any of this stuff, so it's
yeah, that's true.
How well done it is or if he's got motives himself, but I respect somebody who will go outside the box and cover this, and he is in Canada, so it's nearby, but basically the guy who heads that Edmonton Commission, Pat Reed, seemed really negligent in the way he handled the Haig situation. Haig had several knockouts in Canada that Reed
that
was supposed to, that he was supposed to report to the commission and maybe he didn't or didn't do it in time. And then he rubber stamped him for this fight after a couple weeks off a knockout. And there's probably an issue there that needs to be more explored. And this guy, Mike Russell, has written a couple articles on it, and that's how it came onto my radar.
Yeah, it's probably an example of just benign bureaucracy where somebody, I can't imagine there's a lot of MMA in Edmonton to begin with, so their commission's probably not very well developed. It's not going to be California where it's you know, we have serious experts like Andy Foster devoted to running this thing and wanting to improve the world. This could just be some guy that was running the DMV the previous year and got his emotion or something. And maybe trying to do his best, but he doesn't know. Like, I guess, I don't know, he got knocked out, but he's been awake ever since. So that's a long stretch. That's like 17 days out getting knocked out. That's pretty good. Yeah, you can fight. And then the guy dies.
Yeah, it's just like, obviously it's hard to tell a guy when he shouldn't fight, but like my reading of this article is that there were opportunities where he fought too soon and they shouldn't have let him go, and they had rules in place and statutes that say, you know, after this happens you need 6 months off, and they let him fight in 2 months. Or after this happens, you need a year off, and he fought in 5 months and got knocked out. And then they were supposed to report these knockout finishes to whatever website where they track all of this stuff, and it didn't get reported. So, like, he had some weird, like, kickboxing matches that weren't reported on the MMA side and vice versa. And it was like he had extra knockouts, but whoever the commission was, this guy Pat Reed, was – like negligent in how all of it was handled according to the story. But what caught my eye was the fact that UFC has taken out extra liability insurance for this show in Edmonton. Like, what, why would they do that? Like, that almost,
you probably have to,
I guess, but
I'm sure that
why not just run the show in Boston? Like, you don't have to go to fucking Edmonton. You haven't been to New England in over a year.
They've been to Chicago or the Midwest in a long time either, which is really weird. I'm guessing what happens is they booked Edmonton and this kind of showed up, and when they're getting all their paperwork ready, the insurance adjuster looked at it and go, okay, somebody just died in this province, and they did their actuarial table thing and go, okay, you need more insurance. That's just fine. Like, look, you're a riskier province. Makes sense. If you're an insurance company and you're going to insure risk of harm to somebody, you're going to trust Edmonton or you're going to trust Nevada? You trust Nevada. I'm not going to trust these dickheads. They just killed a guy.
This is good, too. Also, Edmonton only gives you one shot at making weight. So if you miss weight the first time, you're
well, New York had that.
Yeah. But it's always a question, does everybody know the rules and have they followed up?
I feel like this could be one of those situations where it's just the UFC running the show.
Yeah, could be.
Like they're just going to be looking at it and just going to bully everybody in a good way and just be like, no, we ain't doing this shit. Come on now. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Edmonton seems a little sketchy.
Isn't that kind of like a cowboy town, though?
Yeah, I feel like all Alberta, Canada is. Wasn't Bret Hart's first gimmick a cowboy or something?
Yeah, he's from Calgary.
I know, but it's still Alberta, right?
Yeah, I know Calgary's cowboy and shit. They got the Calgary Stampede.
Seems too cold to have cowboys.
It's not cold there, though. It's a temperate climate. It's kind of like you get that throughout some of the Rockies as well. Like, there's the Chinook winds come off of the coast, off of the left coast there up in, Alaska. And they come down, and there's this Chinook wind. It'll hit, it'll go through Denver. It'll hit western South Dakota a lot, like the Black Hills, Deadwood and all that area out there, Rapid City. They get very mild and temperate winters compared to what they should.
Huh.
And that's been Mike knows way too much about weird weather patterns right here at halfcredit.com.
As far as the actual show goes, now that we bashed their athletic commission, we've got, you'd want to call it a double main event because there's two title fights. In the true main event, we've got Demetrius Johnson versus Ray Borg.
I think this is fairly a co-main event, actually.
Would you say that?
When you look at the way that, with their drawing powers, look, a lot more people have paid to watch an Amanda Nunes fight.
Absolutely. Oh my god, yeah.
Because nobody ever paid for a single Mighty Mouse fight.
She's been on like three of the biggest shows of all time. I think she was on 196.
And
she was 200, on 200.
207.
Yeah. All like million buy shows anyways.
Yeah.
But this is an interesting show for a number of reasons. I more like the behind the scenes stuff that went on with this entire card because number one, there was all that drama with DJ and Dana where the UFC wanted DJ to defend against TJ Dillashaw and Johnson didn't want to do it. And he put up a stink. He put out all that stuff on social media saying he would have fought Pettis. He wants to fight someone at 125. And eventually they said, okay, we'll give you Borg. And Johnson's excuse for not wanting to fight Dillashaw wasn't, I didn't think it was a great argument. Like he was saying he had never fought at 125 and couldn't make the weight. But when there's a former champ moving down and you don't have anybody else to fight and there's no draws in the division, I didn't see an issue with the Dillashaw fight personally.
To me,
but
if you're the champion, outside of this other fight will make more money, you don't get to say no to anybody.
Right.
You can't say that guy doesn't deserve it. You're the champion. You got to put up or shut up.
I agree. And then Dana buried Demetrius after. Even after he got the Borg fight, White said, you want Ray Borg, we'll give you Ray Borg. I'm sure the fans will be clamoring and ticket sales will be through the roof and pay-per-views will be off the charts.
Dana White.
Like Dana buried him. Like, what kind of promoter does that?
A promoter that's willing to think, fuck you. You need this money more than I do.
Yeah.
I got hundreds of millions. I can afford to have, this is my fuck you money. Yeah, you want to see what this is like? Here's your Ray Borg fight. Also, you're in Edmonton. 2 weeks after the biggest fight of all time. Good luck.
Yeah. But the other backstory with this fight too is he's going for the all-time title defense record. Like if he wins this fight, he's tied with Anderson Silva now.
Technically, yes, technically.
What do you mean technically?
I can't remember if I went over this last week or not.
No.
It's not really fair to Anderson because he showed up and made weight and beat Travis Luter in what was supposed to be a title fight. But Luter missed weight, it wasn't a title fight, so it didn't go as a title defense. So really, Mighty Mouse is tying the de facto record.
Is that right?
Yep.
That's factual. Should I fact check you?
Go ahead and fact check me.
I believe you. I'll do it later, though.
I would too, just in case.
No, that's just how I am.
Like in the back of my mind, like I know that the title wasn't at stake, mm-hmm. but it would be today. But I don't think it was back in that time. I'm pretty sure that was just a 3-round fight, and then he tapped him.
Yeah, but it still wouldn't be a title fight. The challenger has to make the weight for it to be a title fight. Like it would still be a non-title fight today. Like if Borg weighs in at 126. It would be a non-title fight.
Yeah, but isn't there something where, like, if Borg wins, he doesn't get the title, but if
correct
Johnson loses, wouldn't he be stripped of it?
I don't know.
So it's kind of like when they've had those half-title shots. Like, I remember when, I think it was, when Chael fought Paulo Fijo in WEC. He won the championship. In his last fight for the company there, Paulo missed weight by like 7 or 8 pounds, some huge number.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And it was kind of ruled on the spot almost that if Chael won, he would get the title, and if Paulo won, he would be stripped because he had screwed up.
Yeah, sounds familiar. I can't remember. I feel like it happened in the UFC more recently than that too.
Might have been
a Demetrius fight. Anyway, they're playing it up like he's going for the record on this show, but you wouldn't even know it based on the lack of promotion. I know there's an embedded for this, which I haven't watched any of, but this shows that it's like crickets, man. I'm not hearing much about it at all, are you?
No, I'm hearing nothing.
Right.
Zero, to the point where, like, I was looking at some Google stuff, and I'm like, that's weird, like, how sparse it is for coverage. I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to it, just because we haven't had high-level MMA in a while, and mm-hmm. this will definitely be that, even if it is boring or nobody cares, because who the fuck is Ray Borg?
Right.
But, look, let's face it, Triple G and Canelo's the same day, isn't it?
No, it's the next weekend.
Oh, I thought it was this weekend.
No, yeah, it's a week and a half.
I was looking forward to that.
You can still can look forward to it.
I guess. My whole timeline's thrown off. I might have something completely new to look forward to next weekend. I had nothing on the horizon for this weekend. Anyways, this show's going to be... I don't know what it'll be. Although in hindsight, it's very, very humorous to me that Dana White even threatened in passing the idea, and people took it seriously, that he would disband the division.
Mm.
Like, this fucking company is almost at the point with an interim championship in every division. They're so desperate for champions. They have a 145-pound women's division. They've added, like, what, 4 divisions in the past, like, year or something like that. There's no way in shit they're going to cut a division. Oh, that's hilarious.
It's also such a ridiculous threat. If you don't fight TJ Dillashaw, I'm getting rid of your entire division. Like, what the hell? Like, who says that?
Like, of all the people you're going to throw everything away for TJ Dillashaw? Really?
He got screwed. Cody Garbrandt hurt his back in the German... Which doctors couldn't heal him. Should be noted, since we were talking about Edmonton and the weight issue, if you only have one chance to make weight, Borg has missed weight twice. He weighed in at 126.75 pounds. And then when he fought Lewis Smoka, he weighed in at 129.5. So making 125 has been an issue for him. He's 24 right now. So he's one of those guys who's getting a little older and might be having trouble making that previous weight he was making when he first started in MMA when he was 18.
Yeah, it does seem like those midget weights are the ones where people grow out of it real fast.
Yeah.
It's like they've literally, like, it's one thing that as you get older as a man, you will just fill out. But, like, these are people going through actual growth spurts still.
Could be, yes. Naturally or assisted. But,
I mean, 18 or 19 year old? Well, shit, they got all kinds of growth spurts happening then. They're just growing everywhere.
Ray Borg's nickname? This is always one of my favorite games to play.
You
don't know it.
Fuck me. I'm pretty sure I do, or if I don't, I'm gonna say what it should be. Is it Assimilate?
No, it's the Chaz Mexican Devil.
Holy shit. He missed that one by a mile. Your name is the Borg, and you don't go with an Assimilate reference. You go with Taz Mexican? Any asshole could be the Taz Mexican. Jeez. Fuck, man.
I'm presuming you like DJ in the fight?
Given that when I was trying to, like, watch Ray Borg fights and kind of catch up,
yeah.
Like, I couldn't recognize any of the people he'd beaten. And I'm like, that's a bad sign.
I respect that you actually... What in you makes you want to go and watch Ray Borg fights?
Oh, I just like to watch stuff and get... I'm always looking for something to watch.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those weird things. When you have everything, it's sometimes overwhelming. You don't know exactly what to watch. So when I have, like, something to kind of, like, point me in the direction, I'm like, hey, Ray Borg, yeah, let's get caught up and be the first time I can really sit down and go, I'm going to learn about Ray Borg.
Yeah.
I didn't learn anything.
Well, I respect the fact that you did that. I don't have that in me. I can picture Ray Borg. I know he's won some fights, and I remember him. I remember the Smoka fight because it was a fun fight, but... I don't have it in me to do that. I'm picking DJ too. You think he finishes him, goes the distance?
Even though his reputation for going the distance is a bit overblown, when in doubt, bet on going the distance there. But I think he'll submit him in like the fourth or fifth. I think he's just gonna. Just overwhelmed, just like he did in his last title fight against insert name later, because who the fuck knows?
It was Wilson Hayes.
Did he have one? I feel like he fought Chris Carriasso for some reason.
And back in 2014. They kind of blend together.
Was it for a title fight?
Yeah.
Jeez, what a fucking joke.
All right, so I wanted to do this, but let me try and... Hey, give me a second here, because... My computer is really struggling here. So I was thinking we should compare Anderson Silva's...
You really shouldn't have so many tabs open.
I shut them as I go along. Right now we still have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9 open. I really think I should have just restarted my computer this morning. Like, I'll go, like, weeks without restarting this thing.
I think
it's
more just the cache is building up in your the tabs.
I
can't have that many tabs open at one time.
It was fine. I've done it the last, like, several weeks. Didn't even know. It's good.
Yeah, I guess my brother does that shit.
Your brother's so weird. Hang on.
He is weird.
Is he still married?
Yeah.
That's good.
He's closing in on the Coughlin record.
Just this generation. I mean, your dad.
He's
got a way to go to catch up to your dad. But yeah, the second generation of Coughlins, yeah.
I gotta start that countdown.
That would be good, like a clock, a running clock.
Problem is, like, I would go with, I'm not gonna go with the final date, like, the actual dissolution. Like, on legally. Now I'll go with the earlier one. That's funnier.
Okay. Hang on here a second. So what I think we should do is quickly, and I say this, if freaking thing would load. Or maybe you can do it. Do you have a computer? I could do it on my phone. Hang on.
I have a computer. I have a phone. I have an iPad.
You are the coolest. Hang on. Anderson Silva. So what I think we should do is compare their title defenses. We're going to say who has a better resume. We're going to just go in order. And you're going to say who the better fighter was. Does that sound like a plan? Fucking thing. I feel like Bill O'Reilly right now, ranting around. Fucking thing sucks. Let's go!
As you say, if it's not like that linguistic hiccup there, that's a really weird reference. Because Bill O'Reilly's not like who I immediately think of, like, oh, damn, computers. Like, really, Bill O'Reilly's the one you pull out?
Yeah, just with the teleprompter. Like, I love that so much. And I love it before it was...
Sucks.
Yeah, like, I'll do that at work in the office anytime, like, the printer jams up or something. And still no one understands the reference, and I got to replay the video for them at work all the time. But anyway,
whenever I've been with around a printer that doesn't work, I always say, PC loaded? What the fuck does that?
Yeah. Michael Bolton, Office Space. Top five comedy of all time.
It could be.
No, it is. I'm letting you know.
Oh, I'm trying to think now.
Don't strain. So, non-title bout. So, yeah, they do call the Luter fight a non-title bout. You're correct. So, that was in 07.
I am set was February of 2007, and I'm pretty sure that's the card that Mirko Krokop debuted on, beating Eddie Sanchez by a crappy fight.
Was that his debut or second fight? Didn't he debut against Gonzaga and get knocked out?
No. He did beat against Eddie Sanchez.
And Eddie that Alvarez show, would have been fucking awesome.
Could have maybe given him a fun fight at least. It's either that he debuted then, or that was Rampage in his debut, and that was really boring. And like, oh, that sucked.
All right, so looking back, DJ beat Benavidez to win the title. And in his first defense, he fought John Dodson. In Anderson Silva's first real defense, he fought Nate Marquardt. Who had the tougher fight?
Wait, what about... So, am I comparing the first defense?
Opponents. Who had the tougher fight?
Okay, so I'm not comparing who their title fights when they won it. Okay, that'd be first defense. So, first defense is Nate Marquardt versus... John Dodson's a tougher fight.
All right, so we got DJ's up one. Then we've got... I'm going to fuck this up.
This is riveting. I wish I had like, some sort of clock thing playing. I could have played, like... Oh, we could have, like, Wheel of Fortune.
John Moraga, Rich Franklin. That's easy.
Rich Franklin.
Agreed. So we're tied at one. Now we've got Dan Henderson... Or Joseph Benavidez?
I'm going to say Henderson for two reasons. One, I think he may have a little bit better resume. Two, also, Anderson should get a lot of credit, or extra credit, I think, at least here, for how dominant he's been. Not just who he's beat, but it's how.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'll go with Henderson there.
This is a good one. Patrick Cote or Ali Bagatinov?
Ali Bagatinov.
Is better than Patrick Cote.
Patrick Cote sucks, and that fight was dog shit.
Right? So
I was here live, and I was angry. It was the first UFC ever in Chicago. Fucking
all right.
Dog shit.
This was not a good fight either. Kallus Leites.
Yeah, I know. He's got a bunch of them coming here.
Or Chris Curiosso.
Tala's Latus.
It's tougher than Chris Carioso.
Yeah.
So Anderson's...
I'm a little bit of a Latus mark, but still. Given that I use Chris Carioso, it's like, this guy sucks. Oh, sure enough.
So now Anderson's up 3-2. Damian Maia. We should mention that in between some of these fights, he beat Forrest Griffin and James Irvin, but...
James Irvin on morphine.
I mean, Ken Shamrock have problems.
And Forrest Griffin was on Xanax.
reportedly.
No, he failed for that.
I don't think it was Xanax. I think he claimed it was Xanax. There was something else weird going on there, I remember. But anyway, then we've got Damian Maya or Horiguchi.
Oh, boy. In hindsight, the Damian Maya one looks pretty damn good. But a lot of that's because I factor in how great he's looked at 170. Whereas 185, like, he won, but it wasn't like I was clamoring for it. And, you know, I mean, the fight was so awful. At least with Horiguchi, DJ beat him every which way.
But with 1 second left in the fight, too.
Yeah, but first he was a tougher opponent. Damian Maya, you know, he's still in the UFC.
All right. Anderson is up 4-2 at this point. Then we've got Chael Sonnen or John Dodson.
Jeez, that's a good one.
This is the stupidest game ever, bud.
This is a good game. I like this game.
Oh, thank you. All right.
I like this game a lot. This is a good way to compare fighters in a
Yeah, no other MMA show's doing this.
That's true, and you're never going to get like a, like, no all-time discussion comes down to, so, John Dodson or Chael Sonnen. Yeah. Nate Marquardt or Ali Bagutinov. What?
Yeah.
So, I really like, Chael Sonnen.
Jeez, Anderson's pulling away. He's up 5-2 against DJ now. So now we've got, where are we? Vitor Belfort or Henry Cejudo?
Man, that's one of those things where, like, I kind of think it's Cejudo.
Yes.
But it's Vitor in totality. And, like, over time, I mean, Vitor Belfort's looked really great at times, and he's in, like, his steroid era there. I got to go with Vitor.
All right. So Anderson's up 6-2 now. Then we've got Yushin Okami or Tim Elliott.
Yushin Okami.
Okay.
Tim Elliott, like, after that seemed like a bigger deal. But, like, leading up to that fight, nobody had any illusions that he was going to win that thing. Even though he made a name for himself in losing, really.
And then we've got... Where are we here? Chael Sonnen or Wilson Hayes? There's two people you would
probably
put together.
Although oddly enough, I can see them grappling with one another, just because I can kind of see Chael grappling with anyone nowadays. And Hayes got like some steroid thing happening or whatever, so I feel like that's in Chael's wheelhouse. I'm going to go with Wilson Hayes.
All right. So, according to my math, we, meaning you, chose Anderson Silva to have 7 tougher opponents, 7-3. He had 7 of the tougher opponents as opposed to DJ's 3, if you match them up, you know, chronologically by defense. Which is kind of interesting. I hadn't done it myself personally, but I'd probably be in the ballpark you were. I don't know what that means or what that says. Maybe it says the flyweight division isn't as deep. Although I feel like time-wise, like, the flyweight division's young, but it's got a lot of good guys now, and maybe the middleweight division back then it wasn't as good as it is now. Like, if you think about Anderson fighting, you know, prime Luke Rockhold or Jacques Array or the Cuban guy.
Yo Romero.
Yes, thank you, Romero.
Gay Jesus.
Yes. How would he fare against those guys in his prime would be interesting too, because I think the middleweight division now is a lot better than it was, you know, 10 years ago.
Oh yeah, but I think when I like kind of look at them, I have a feeling that in time, I will judge Demetrius Johnson's a little better. I do think that there's some time aspect bias to a lot of the stuff with Anderson. Like the Damian Maya one in particular. And, you know,
if you'd asked me like a couple months after that fight had happened, I don't think I would be praising Maya nearly like I would today. Whereas with, you know, the DJ fights, they're basically all in the past 3 years or so. I think that's kind of what's I mean, the only thing, the difference between the two is basically DJ has done it, I think, quicker, but he has never had anything out of his weight class.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, goddamn, that Forrest Griffin shit, that was some magic in there. That's basically like if Demetrius Johnson went up to 135 and kind of put on a clinic against Dominic Cruz.
Right. Absolutely. The thing people forget about that Forrest Griffin fight, like, people laugh him off, but he was, like, heavyweight champ. It wasn't like, he has his rep because, like, he jokes around and whatever. He was really good, like, heavyweight.
Oh, yeah, it was, he beat Rampage, lost to Rashad, and then lost to Anderson. Like, that was in his, like, wheelhouse prime. And something just happened, because even when, like, leading up to the fight, when Anderson beat him, it wasn't, like, it was impressive, but there was something about it where, like, Forrest never got that respect, and it was like, shit, man, look at Anderson, this dude's just a freak.
Mm.
And I got that with DJ.
I think there was the vibe a lot of those guys off Tough weren't that good. They were. I mean, a lot of them ended up being title contenders, and besides Forrest, did anyone win a title? I guess Bisping, but he wasn't on that season anyway. Rashad. I mean, a lot of those guys panned out and were really good, but I feel like there was a vibe that they weren't elite guys, and a lot of them turned out to be champions, you know?
In a weird kind of, like, pro wrestling way, they basically were the generation, like, the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels types, where they had to earn their stripes as the old, like, big dogs kind of faded away. And, like, they won people over with their work rate. And, you know, they always just kind of went out there and they won enough fights that you couldn't deny them after time. You know, they weren't just reality star guys. And you stick around long enough and you beat up enough grown men, then other grown men will sing your praises.
In the co-main event, Amanda Nunes defends her bantamweight title against Valentina Shevchenko. If you remember back, this fight was supposed to happen a couple months ago, but Nunes pulled out of the fight because she had sinusitis and wasn't feeling well. This is a rematch.
She required Nunes surgery, which I don't think she got.
Either way, rematch. Dana also buried Nunes. This is a quote from him. He said, "I won't put Nunes in another pay-per-view main event. A lot of fighters head where they don't feel right. I don't know that I've ever had a situation like today, though, where she physically was capable to fight. It was 90% mental and 10% physical."
Yeah, no, it's a UFC 215 sub-headline. The show headlined by people Dana said would never headline. Right after the last pay-per-view, featuring a guy that Dana said would never headline. And the show before that, which had Yoel Romero in the main event, and Dana probably said something about him once. Right after he said, "Robert Whittaker, who's that?" So yeah, they're on a run.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So as far as this is a rematch, like I said, personally, I like Nunes. I just think she's on a roll. She's the bigger, stronger fighter. Shevchenko's probably more technical. As far as striking goes, she's got that kickboxing background. But I've always thought Shevchenko's a little small for the weight class, and Nunes is obviously a fairly large bantamweight.
Yeah, I can't really pick one or the other definitively. My only worry with Nunes is more the bullshit sports announcer, like, the X Factor. It's like, you know, she's been riding high. She's getting more recognition than ever. But obviously, clearly something weird happened at International Fight Week. Like, whatever it was. Maybe it was legitimate, but her response to this has been very odd. And I can't imagine she's afraid. She's already fought the chick.
Mm.
But something's weird there, and is she, like, is life too good for her? you know, I see a lot of pictures of her. She looks very happy with her girlfriend, Nina Ansaroff, who fights soon. Like, they seem very, very genuinely happy. And can she be great if she's happy? Like, I think, you know, I don't think Valentina could be. I don't think that's ever a problem. I think that Valentina will never be happy because those people just aren't happy. They don't allow it. So the question is, do I root for happiness? And I think I will. Yes, Amanda Nunes wins.
I agree. Yeah, I think she's just too big for Shevchenko. I think Shevchenko will go down to 125 after this is my hunch. Third from the top was supposed to be Junior Dos Santos versus Francis Ngannou, but on August 18th, it was announced that he was pulled from the card after being notified by USADA of a potential doping violation.
You know what? I'm really glad that happened.
I'm not. I wanted to see that fight.
I actually want to see Volkov and Ngannou more than I do Ngannou and Dos Santos.
Really?
I want to see two really good young guys who got potential versus a guy like Dos Santos where I'm just, like, kind of sad because he looks really old and, like, flabby. Like, he just looks like an old man. He's beat up and his skin's a little loose and his face is kind of, like, he's got weird lumps in his head and his ears, it's disgusting. And he's just a happy-go-lucky guy, but it's like, oh, don't let him take any more beatings. Just stop it.
I agree. Those cane fights were not good. So, yeah, now that shockingly, nobody wanted to face Ngannou on short notice. I'm shocked by that.
Think about the damage Velasquez did to him, by the way.
Oh, it's insane.
Just two fights, which, like, it shows, like, how brutal this sport can be. Like, we see, you know, a lot of these guys have a lot of fights, and they're not all really killers, but you get in there with one of those life-changing fights, and, yeah, this shit lasts forever. That's like being in a bad car accident.
When they say that fight took years off their life, like, those are ones where you could really legit probably say that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the quality of life goes down. I'm sure that they increase your likelihood of forgetting who and where they are and falling down the stairs at 57. Yeah.
Not good. Like that we were talking about it earlier. The other fight that always makes me think of that is Waller and McDonald. You know, just that beating.
Oh, yeah.
It was just when neither guy goes down and takes those like full punches, and you're just like looking at their face, and they're all like bloodied, and the face is puffed up. And I know there was a GIF out there of JDS, Waller. Of JDS too, where actually both of them. That's funny that my mind works like that. But the gif between rounds, you know, they show that close-up of their face in between each round before they go out or touch gloves or whatever, and just how their faces both change between the rounds. You're like, holy shit. The progression of the swelling and the bruising and everything is scary.
The scary one for me, and I just watched it, and I'm currently enough – funny enough, I'm watching Frank Yeager and Gray Maynard, which which is weird. Of those double crazy fights, Frankie's fine still, and Gray isn't.
True.
But I was thinking,
Frankie's got like a freakish recovery rate, though.
Yeah,
I mean, granted, it catches up with everybody at some time, and it should have caught up with him a while ago. But even in that fight with Jeremy Stevens, like, he got knocked down hard and came back in that one. He's still got that recovery, like, in his mid-30s where he's been in so many wars. He's freakish like that.
I think that's cardio. You know, that's just, you know, you got, if you're in really, really great shape, like, a lot of these guys are such good athletes, I think they kind of cheat at certain points in their career. They don't have to work super hard all the time. I think Frankie's probably like a Nick Diaz type. You know, he's just probably always very active, and he's never going to get fat and out of shape. And I think if you're never fat and out of shape, that goes a long way to helping you with these things.
The other factor they talk about a lot is guys who cut a lot of weight, and Frankie's never really had to cut a lot of weight. He always says he can make 135, even though he's fought at 155 and now at 145. There's more like fluid surrounding your brain if you're not cutting all that weight, and that's one of the reasons they want to – besides, obviously, the dehydration and everything, one of the reasons doctors and whatever medical professionals want to cut back on that is because of the lack of fluid in the brain. It can cause more concussions, and there's less protection of the brain because you've drained all your fluids.
Yeah, no, it's scary as shit. And then I look, just finished watching Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald, their second one, and that scene where they, at beginning of the fifth round, and it, Lawler's kind of pumping up the crowd, and McDonald has got that face of blood, and he's got that dead look in his eyes where he's clearly concussed and does not exist in that moment. And that is like, that's again, a life changing type of deal. Also, he's a real fucking psycho.
He's a scary dude. It's interesting too, because if he didn't like take that beating, you wonder where he'd be, because he's a really good welterweight. Like I think he'd do okay against Woodley. You know what I mean?
If he was a top
five guy still.
Oh yeah. If it wasn't for some weird money stuff or whatever, like, he'd easily be in the mix at 170 right now.
Or I think he's just trying to make some money in Bellator for a couple of years and he'll go back to UFC.
Yeah,
I guess, you know what, I'll make some more money in Bellator and save myself and beat some lesser guys and go back, you know?
Although he's got that kind of weirdo aspect to his personality, where I can see him like slowly turning into like a weird Ben Askren type.
Hey, maybe that's for the best, you know?
Like, I feel like Rory McDonald, without any self-awareness, likes to say things like, I like the features, and I like the way the light hits the male form. You just know he said that at one point.
Huh. Interesting. Sounds like something you've probably said at one point.
Yeah, I know my own.
We've got Neil Magny versus Rafael Dos Anjos. That's a welterweight fight. Dos Anjos' second fight at welterweight against a good guy, a durable guy in Magny, who's been in the top 10-ish of the welterweight division for a couple of years now.
Yeah, no, this is a... Actually, this fight doesn't mean shit. It's like, we just saw this when he fought Tarek Saffiedine. I like Neil Magny. It's one of those things where I'm like, oh, okay, like, oh, I can kind of see this working. It'll probably be okay. And Dos Anjos might win. It'll be competitive, but who gives a shit? Neither of these guys is going anywhere. Can you really see the UFC headlining like Tyrone Woodley versus Rafael Dos Anjos? Like, who would give a shit? Nobody wanted to see him fight at 155. He's fighting on free TV. He's so boring. At least Mighty Mouse complains and he plays video games.
How about Ilir Latifi versus Tyson Pedro at light heavyweight?
I'm only interested because I followed that Latifi story of him getting that super short notice and doing really well and earning the respect of everybody. And then he got another fight, and we thought, oh, that's nice of them. And then it turned out, he's actually kind of good. He really took his shit seriously. He moved to Florida, and he works real hard. So I'll root for Ilir. I thought they had like a steroid thing, but he looks kind of pudgy. Like, it's easier to root for a fat guy.
There's a little hype around Pedro. He's younger for the light heavyweight division anyway. He's Australian, is 25 years old, and is coming off two straight wins in the UFC. He had the rear naked choke of Khalil Roundtree, and then he just had that quick knockout of Paul Craig by TKO at 4-10 in the first. Back in March. Well, I'm just saying, he doesn't have a lot of experience. He's another one of these guys who's, you know, younger, 6-0, but we haven't really seen him against a top light heavyweight. But there's a little buzz around him. He's somebody to keep an eye out for.
Hey, I mean, honestly, the light heavyweight division is so screwed up. It's been kind of boxing-fied, where it's basically like, hey, that guy's got a bunch of wins in a row and he's undefeated. Yeah, he's young. Like, ooh, he's somebody new. He isn't one of the same 13 guys that have been treading water, and all of a sudden Shogun just happens to be the one body in the pool that had a little more methane in him, so he rose to the top a little quicker.
In the opener of the main card, we've got Jeremy Stephens versus Gilbert Melendez at featherweight. I believe this is Melendez's first career fight ever at 145, at 35 years old.
It might be, but I don't think so. I think earlier in his career he did, because I very clearly remember watching him early
on.
Right.
When You're right.
Like,
he
fought
at 143 in Shooto.
Yeah. Because I remember early in his career, I always saw him as a small lightweight. He was kind of stocky, and I knew he'd fought at 45, so I thought, okay, he can make that. So I always thought he could make 145. I mean, doing it in older age isn't always the best thing. But he's also, like, it's not like he's necessarily doing it. I mean, he's always been in shape. So, who knows? He's got nothing else to lose. He's already cheated with drugs, so. I look forward to the fight. Actually, that could be a good fight, though. I'm interested in it, at least.
Yeah, I mean, he's on a bit of a skid, so he needs to do something. He's 1-4 in his last five. His only win was against Diego, and that was in a fight that was pretty competitive, and there were moments there where you thought Diego might get the win. Awesome fight, and I'm not knocking it, but at the same time, he's 35, he's going down to 145. Feels a little desperate to me.
Oh, yeah, it's desperate, but hey, he's a desperate man.
Okay, on the prelims, we've got Sarah McMahon versus Ketlin Vieira. Henry Cejudo's back. He's taking on Wilson Hayes. So two former, you know, title contenders at flyweight. It's almost like they put them on the show in case Ray Borg misses weight. And then we've got Sarah Morass versus Ashley Evans-Smith. And Gavin Tucker versus Rick Glenn, former WSOF featherweight champ. And not much on the fight pass card.
So, yeah, it's okay. I mean, Cejudo on paper sounds like, yeah, I'll see how that works. But in reality, it's stuck. That's just how Henry Cejudo rolls, man.
I feel like it's going to be a kickboxing match against a jiu-jitsu guy and a wrestler.
Oh, fuck me. That's going to be awful.
Or maybe Cejudo will be motivated.
No,
he
won't.
No?
He's going to be so passive and afraid because that jiu-jitsu is going to just terrify him.
You think?
Oh, yeah, because you know that's the thing he's the worst at. Because I guarantee he spends all of his time on his striking, which makes sense. And against somebody like Hayes, who's really scary down there, he ain't going to fuck around with that. And Hayes is a Brazilian, so he'll flop or something.
Sounds good. How many buys does this show do?
200,000.
I think 1,000.
Well, you got to be specific with this.
Factually correct. Okay, I think that's all I get for MMA. You want to do a little stuff? I know we're running long here.
Yeah, let's blow through it real quick.
Let's blow some stuff. Speaking of blowing through things, Hurricane Irma is coming. It's supposedly in the Caribbean now. It was a Category 5 storm. I haven't looked in the last couple hours since we started talking, but it's looking like it's going to hit Florida, like the Miami area, southern Florida, to some extent, and really fuck shit up down there.
Yeah, it could be really bad.
I saw something. This was like the most powerful recorded hurricane in the history of the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, something like that. It was something crazy, and it's just so massive, and it's just dead on point. I remember growing up, like, I remember Hurricane Andrew. It was, like, the first hurricane I kind of really remember,
mm-hmm.
And it was, like, this big deal, and it was so massive, and I just remember thinking, this is this huge destruction, and we all felt sad, and now it's like everything else. It's just sports. It's just, like, watch that entertainment on TV.
Unless you're the one that lives there.
Yeah, if you're in it, obviously it's horrible, but honestly, there's a lot of us who are just kind of sitting around watching going, I'm waiting for a good shot. Like, I want to see a house get blown up or something. Like, I want to see how bad this can get. Let's see if you take down another city. I wonder what Miami would look like if you knocked over a building. Let's do it. That's what I want. If they knocked over a fucking building, that'd be amazing television. My life's not going to change at all. The world's not going to change, but I have you imagine Donald Trump if a building got knocked over?
Can you? Oh, we're gonna build this building. Oh, that would be beautiful. Oh, I need it.
Yeah, it's weird because you look at I forget what they call them, spaghetti strands or however, like all these different computer models of how the hurricane will go, and there's literally some that have it going up the coast towards New England. Other ones have it going out to sea, like back out into the Atlantic. Some have it going like directly over Florida and inland, and some have it like going in between Cuba and Florida and heading towards the Gulf. It's like, I know you make fun of meteorologists sometimes, and I think meteorologists on like your local news are different than like, you know, doctors who study climatology and hurricanes and that sort of thing. And it's just amazing that these computer models can have it so different and how unpredictable weather still is even in 2017.
Well, that's kind of one of the weird things is like, I make fun of, well, all of them really, because there is something to this whole, on some level, whether they're accurate or not, we have these computer models that forecast out the weather for decades. And like, there's still, you know, they're super, super powerful. And meanwhile, we can't figure out where this giant thing is going to be in 24 hours. And I totally get why like, it's really difficult to measure it, but it's just kind of crazy. It shows like how really versatile freaking nature is. I mean, man, they're going to die, and nobody knows who's going to die first.
I'm curious to see if there's ever a point where, like, humans can control the weather. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Like they talked about, like, there's weird conspiracy shit up in Alaska they're trying to do. Eddie Bravo talks about it. But, like, if at some point, like, we can go out into the Atlantic when a tropical storm start and find a way to counteract it either by making it really cold or really hot or changing the wind or doing something, suck the humidity out of the air, something crazy that doesn't even exist now, but in, you know, 100 years, we'll just take for granted and be like, what's a hurricane? What's a tornado? We figured out how to combat it. But the question would be,
for sure.
The question is, should we? Do you know what I mean? Maybe.
Doesn't matter, we will.
Yeah, true.
We're going to do it, so whether we should or not, we have to figure out how we're going to do it, what's going to happen. It's just inevitable, and I have every reason to believe it will be done quicker than even I can imagine. I just think, I was talking about this with Brian the other day, 100 years ago, can you imagine if you walked up to somebody and said, yeah, in my pocket, I have this thing that's the size of a credit card. Don't worry, you'll find out about credit cards in a couple of decades. It's the size of a wallet, and with this thing, I can literally talk to anybody on the planet, and I can find out everything anybody knows all right here. Like, that's fucking voodoo. The number of crazy, super important inventions that have to happen between 1917, like, you know, real electricity and cars and the telephones being, like, truly installed everywhere. Like, my mom grew up in South Dakota where, you know, they didn't have area codes and things like that. Like, phone numbers were 5 digits at one point. So, and now we, again, you know, I have the world in my pocket. Yeah, we're going to control the fucking weather. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be so great.
Yeah.
I'm going to live in Rainland.
We'll see. I feel like there'll be a way to do that at some point. They'll figure it out. As long as all these storms don't kill us first. Speaking of people getting killed, North Korea is still on the news. Kim Jong-un, one of the oons, is like detonating bombs underground that are as powerful as like mega earthquakes and hydrogen bombs. So obviously the Trump crew does not.
That, by the way,
you don't think that's happening?
Fucking no way.
What do you think that What do you think that earthquake was?
I would be willing to bet that those assholes have dynamite or is doing something to shake the ground. Because think about this little pissant and who he is.
Okay.
He likes big shows of military force, right? Big fucking rockets and everything. Why wouldn't he detonate it above ground? We did.
It didn't blow up the atmosphere. It would look super duper impressive. It's not like you have to really worry about the quality of the countryside of fucking North Korea. There's no reason to do it. We do it underground in America because we're, you know, we want to hide it and shoot. We're not make a big spectacle, but nothing's a bigger spectacle than a nuclear bomb.
I can't get into the mindset of North Korea, so it's hard for me to say. But it was a big enough explosion that it seemed like it was a nuclear bomb. Like, you think it was just, like, millions of pounds of dynamite?
If it even happened. I don't want to get all Alex Jonesy here.
Yeah. You don't think the earthquake happened? You think it's just, like, propaganda to get us into a war with North Korea?
I do think it doesn't make a lot of sense for this guy to keep detonating them underground. He wants to shoot a missile. He wants to literally buzz Guam with missiles to show off, but he won't make a nuke go off above ground. It really does something weird there. I don't know. I mean, it would be weird if there was some, like, deep state running everything and, you know, Halliburton was like, oh, this Trump guy's getting out of control. We need another war around here. We gotta get one in before the next hippie comes in with the election. Let's gin up a war. But I don't know where the truth is there. I'm gonna go with the one where it's all being faked. Yeah, I'm gonna go with that. And people are keeping it alive because it's good stories. And there is, like, there is a danger there, but it's just overblown.
Well, the whole reason I brought this up was because Dennis Rodman says he can intervene to help with North Korea. In a Good Morning Britain interview on Wednesday, the former NBA star offered to help mediate between Donald Trump and the North Korean leader. Rodman also said his friendship with Kim Jong-un is built on doing cool things together. He mentioned, I basically hang out with him all the time. We laugh, we sing karaoke, we do lots of cool things. We ride horses and go skiing. And we hardly ever talk politics, and that's the good thing about it.
That's the good thing?
Mm.
Maybe that not getting beheaded is pretty good. That said, I think I've just been proven right again. Because if we live in a world where the United States of America is lying about nuclear bombs and earthquakes and everything to gin up support for some sort of fake war, blah, blah, blah. We also live in a world where Dennis Rodman is the guy that could stop it. And that's where we're at right now. There's a better than zero chance that Dennis Rodman does this. Because fucking 2 years ago, Donald Trump wasn't going to be president. And now Dennis Rodman? Why not? Why can't he stop a world war? It's just stupid enough to happen. He's a cool dude. He's just hanging out with his buddy. Probably snowboarding or something. And I'll just be like, come on, man. Just let it go. I gotta live there. All right? I'll bring over some good Dom Perignon. And trust me, I got this new sex act I found. We'll try it. With the girls, I mean.
In baseball news.
Not like that, Kim. Come on. No.
Red Sox used Apple Watch in the dugout to steal signals from the Yankees. Is this like...
This is so stupid.
This is stupid. Okay, I'm not a big baseball guy. Can I just tell you what I know about stealing signals, and it's not much? So basically the catcher's signaling to the pitcher what the pitch is going to be, and the opposing team tries to steal the signal and let their batter know. And that's gone on for years. Like, they would use the center field camera, and if there's a runner on second base, he would try and signal to the batter. But the Red Sox were, like, somehow doing it where they would get the signal sent to the dugout on Apple Watches and alert the runner on second, who would alert the batter at home, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's stupid. Why is it stupid?
Okay, it's stupid for so many reasons. Just for clarity's sake, like, stealing signals is not against the rules.
Okay.
It's using technology to do it is against the rules.
Okay.
So if the guy standing on second base can see read the signals, he's allowed to do that. Mm. So you have, like, an obligation as a catcher and pitcher to hide your signals a little bit. It's part of the game.
Mm.
But this, nobody gives a shit about this story. It just sounds better because it came to the Apple Watch. Well, it's just some dude sitting in center field with a camera, and he sees it, and he's sending a text message. It's just a text showed up on a watch instead of a phone. If it showed up on a cell phone, it wouldn't be as funny or whatever. It's because it's got this stupid Apple Watch, and we all go, ooh, it's extra technology. No, it's not. This is exactly how people have always stolen secrets. They used to just use a telephone. There's really no difference. You're just communicating to the guy, yeah, two fingers down means inside slider. All right. He looks at the guy in second base, grabs his ball three times, and smacks his ass. The guy in second base goes, shit, inside slider, and signals to the guy at home. That's how baseball works. It's a manly sport, not gay at all.
Should the Red Sox be penalized for this at all?
Yeah, they get something. It's against the, they broke the rules. You're allowed to go for it, but it's no more awful than deflating a football.
Will New England fans say this is just like Spygate, everybody does it, this isn't that weird, we were just the ones that got caught?
I'm pretty sure that before the Red Sox even replied to baseball as to whether they did it or not, they had already filed a complaint with baseball alleging that the Yankees are doing it with their own network. So, they're not going to be owning up on it. They're going to fight it. It's good for them. I mean, they got caught. That's a game, but they're all doing it.
A familiar name recently just bought the San Diego Chargers. No, I'm sorry, the Houston Rockets. I'm looking at two different things here. Have you ever heard of Tillman Fertitta?
I saw his name earlier today with the Rockets purchase. I meant to look it up, and I'm like, how many people could fucking possibly be named Fertitta that have billions of dollars?
He's a cousin of theirs. But he made his money actually in restaurants and the Golden Nugget casinos. I forget what he owns. It's like Landry's or something, which is a pretty big, obviously, if you've got $2.2 billion to spend on the Rockets. But the story was kind of interesting. My computer isn't loading now, and it looks like Skype is frozen. But
I hear you, though.
Good. I have a totally black screen right now. It's kind of weird.
Really? Really?
Yeah, really?
Really? You got to say it's weird because it's black.
Yeah,
really.
Usually there's...
In this environment?
There's some color.
Disgusting.
Usually there's multiple colors on my screen.
Gosh.
So anyway, he tried to buy the Rockets back in like 1992 for like $85 million, and the current owner bought it for like $89. Like, he lost out by it on like $4 million. Oops. And it was like less than 30 years ago. Now he's buying it for $2.2 billion. So obviously he did well in the meantime, but also kind of a bummer that you lost out on that initial purchase and ended up spending, I don't know, $2.1 billion more dollars for the company than...
Oh, yeah. I think what you're seeing, though, you're seeing the smart billionaires getting even more money here. Like, this guy's a dumb billionaire, whereas, like, a smart billionaire is the guy selling the team right now. Because, like, you know, you're getting $2 billion for something that... Like, it was only, like, 5 years ago. They were having trouble finding people to buy teams. Like, they just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then LeBron James is pretty much turned things around, and now they're the biggest, the hottest thing you can buy, because at the same time, football is just, there's never positive news with football, ever. Every story is negative. And basketball, it's always like, hey, look at this, Steph Curry's figured out that you can shoot from half court whenever you want to. Let's watch this happen for 2 years.
Yeah, so another Fertitta brother is not brother, but Fertitta family member is doing pretty well. I want to talk about the restaurants he owns, but I can't get my thing to work. In other sports news, I know you don't care about tennis, but I'm going to talk about it anyway because it's kind of historic. American woman Madison Keys won tonight and joins Coco Vandeweghe, Venus Williams, and Sloane Stephens to complete the first All-American U.S. Open women's semifinal since 1981.
Really?
Yeah, kind of a fun fact.
That's cool.
Yeah, so...
I knew there's a chance of that.
Yeah,
America.
It's kind of freakish. There were five U.S. women in the semis, five U.S. women in the quarters, and four of them made it to the semis. So, all the ones that needed to win to make it an all-American semifinals did it, which is obviously very rare. It hasn't happened since 81.
You know, it really shows that I always thought that women's sports are a great example of how, like, great, like, traditional Western values of equality can be. Because, like, if you look at, like, you would never have that in the men, ever. You're not going to get four people from the same country in the semifinals like that. Like, it's just not going to happen. Because there's just so, because, like, in every country in the world, men are encouraged to do sports. Like, every single country. There's no country that, like, prides itself on having men that don't do well in sports. And so, you see that. Whereas, with the women, you see these dickbag countries out there, and don't let their women do anything. Meanwhile, here in America, we're like, encouraging little girls to go play soccer. We're pooping everybody's ass in things.
Mm.
Like, American women just smoke the world in basically, like, everything. You think, like, we're top soccer team, top hockey, we're in top stuff, like, everything. We're badass. Look at this. We have four people in the semifinals of the U.S. Open, and we don't even have our best female tennis player. Like, that's a badass depth of talent there.
But it's also very unusual. Like, some of them, like, one of them wasn't even seeded in the tournament. They have, like, 32 seeds for the tournament, and she wasn't even seeded. So it was freakish in that regard. What I find more strange is, there hasn't been an American in the final for men since like 06, which is freaky because when I was growing up, it was like the Americans were the best players in the world. You had Sampras, Agassi, Jim Courier, all these guys just dominating men's tennis. And since Andy Roddick, like he won the U.S. Open, I think in like 02, there's just been like a dearth of American men like succeeding in tennis. It's just interesting because even the generation before, you had McEnroe and Jimmy Connors and these guys who were truly elite, top number one ranked players in the world, and hasn't happened in, you know, 15 years.
Yeah, I think the Americans are probably just not as interested in the sport as in the past. The Brits seem to, I think they got Andy Murray, and they seem to have a few more people, especially relative to their size. But you're also just in this weird era where you've got these two freaks in Nadal and Federer,
mm-hmm.
who are just like, you know, 1 and 1A all time, maybe, who just happen to be steamrolling everyone for 20 years. And you go, I mean, I don't know what their numbers are, but I'd be willing to bet between the two of them, they've won, I'd say, at least 30% of all the majors in the past decade. And that's just two dudes. That's just crazy.
Mm. Federer is even more impressive to me because he's like, he's 35, 36, and he's still going, and he's still one of the best players in the world. He's in the quarterfinals tonight, actually. I'm kind of interested.
And he looks handsome still, and he still looks very, like, he's still very, very, he's very stylish. Like, he ages, and he transforms himself very well. And he looks very classy. Like, if Roger Federer endorses something, I think, yeah, I bet that's a really rich, expensive person thing.
Tell me if you think this is the worst date ever. I mean, you've probably been on some terrible ones. Probably more for your date than for you. But this happened in England, I believe. But and it's written with weird English words, too. But a woman who went to the toilet in her date's house had to be rescued after reportedly getting stuck in the window while trying to retrieve her own poo that would not flush. The unnamed girl had been for a meal at Nando's with student Liam Smith, 24, before they went back to his place for a nightcap. But a bizarre chain of events unfolded after she apparently went to the toilet and blocked the pan. In a panic, she picked up the stool and threw it out the window, but it fell down into a narrow gap between the neighboring property. Faced with a tricky situation, the woman had no choice but to confess to Liam, who bravely helped lower her out of the bathroom window into the gap between the houses in an attempt to retrieve it. But she got wedged upside down and eventually...
Wait, hold on.
No, there are other options at play here. You can't get to a point where you think our only choice was he had to grab me by the ankles and lower me down.
I agree. I would have just left the shit there.
Wait, where is the shit located that it's like in such a precarious public position? Between houses?
It fell down into a narrow gap between the neighboring property. There's pictures of it, of her stuck between the window. I should send it to you, but my internet isn't cooperating. Anyway, the woman had no choice but to confess to Liam, who bravely helped lower out of the bathroom window into the gap between the houses in an attempt to retrieve it. But she got wedged upside down and eventually had to be rescued by firefighters who were called to Liam's pad in Bristol. Liam, a postgraduate studying sociology at Bristol, said, "After our meal, we repaired back to my house for a bottle of wine and a Scientology documentary." About an hour,
rigging endorsement of that university.
About an hour in to Leo, about an hour in, my date got up to use the toilet. She returned with a panic look in her eye, and she told me she had something to tell me. Like, I almost feel like the story is fake, but there's like pictures.
I thought she was stuck in the window and she called to him.
There's,
and he had to show up. Oh, he's like, "Hey, what's going on? Alright, here's the thing. I'm stuck, but I need to get that poop."
Here, I'm gonna Facebook it.
No, don't, I'll find it.
No, you gotta see the pictures. It might not be in the article. Yeah. Cause there's firefighters, like, pulling her out of the thing. It's really weird. Like, I feel like it's gotta be fake, but maybe it's not. I don't know. So that was a good story. Has anything ever happened like that to you on a date?
No. So what, did they get the poop?
I'm assuming she probably took it out while they pulled her out. I'm assuming she held on to it.
I'm trying to figure out, like, what's her end game there?
All right. There you go. I think there's like a little collage of the pictures there.
Okay. Say, all right. She shits in the toilet. Blocks the toilet. I mean, this is, we're already talking a beast of a woman here. Like, that ain't easy to do. A little woman ain't gonna do this. This is a heifer, I bet.
But, okay, so you clog the toilet. You take the turds out of the toilet? How do you even do that? Do you use your hands? Do you fish them out and then you put it in a plastic bag and try and throw it out the window? Where do you get the bag?
Okay, this dude,
yeah,
is hilarious. This look on his face. There's no pictures of her, though, is there?
Well, just her legs and her.
This is hilarious.
Well, there's a picture of her like wedged in the thing.
Oh, I mean, what is? Oh, there's poop everywhere. I mean, it just, come on. So, but in her brain, she thought, all right, toilet is clogged with my giant turds, which I'm gonna pick up and throw out. If you're gonna reach in there and touch it, just smush it or something. I don't know. So she reaches in the toilet, and her plan is, I'll grab it and throw it out the window. Then she does this, and then she goes, oh, that's a bad idea. Well, how did you not think about this? Like, it's a poop. Your plan is to throw it out the window. You should be able to think, hey, I wonder if I want to throw poop at whatever it's going to land outside of the window. No, she throws out the window and goes, uh-oh, that's a bad idea. I can't put it there. What are you going to do with it if you get it then? You're going to put it back in the toilet? She's just going to go back and forth, maybe use the sink? You got to put the poop somewhere, honey.
Yeah, like, part of me thinks it's fake, but this is like Yahoo News, United Kingdom. It's not April. Is it like September 6th? Is that like April Fool's in Europe or something and we don't know it?
Not that I'm aware of.
Like, it doesn't seem like this could be real.
The photos are really good, though. Like, those are realistic type of shots.
Somebody put a lot of work and effort into this.
Yeah. Oh, well. That's Tinder for you.
Is that how it usually goes on there? I'm not familiar.
Oh, the number of times shit has been a problem, yeah.
Wow. I had another good story here, but again, I'm having a hard time. Hang on.
You kind of peaked there.
What's that?
You kind of peaked.
No, I got some other good ones, too. I didn't peak yet. Well, all right, we're going to skip that one for now. We're going to talk about, like, when you think Georgia and animals that would attack a dog, what's the first thing you think of?
Georgia animals would attack a dog, like a mountain lion or something.
Yeah, you would think. And you're kind of on the right track. But in this case, authorities in Georgia received a call early Wednesday morning of a tiger prowling around near a highway southeast of Atlanta. And there's also pictures of that, too, which I can send to you.
So, I know what tigers look like.
But you don't expect them to be walking down the street in Georgia.
Well, that's for sure.
So basically this tiger, people saw this tiger walking down some like highway in Georgia and people called the cops. As the officers were monitoring the tiger after 6 a.m., it ran into a local community to the back of a house, began attacking a dog. With the tiger in close proximity to a school bus route in a densely populated area, officers made the decision to put the animal down with gunfire, fearing that the occupants of the home could be in danger, as well as others in the area.
I mean, how does this not happen in Florida, actually?
Homeowner Brittany Speck told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution she was woken up by flashing police lights and her dog going crazy in the backyard. Little did she know there was a tiger back there. I poked my head out the front door, and then one of the officers yelled at me to get back inside. When she went to her back window to check on her dog, she spotted a tiger. After calling 911, a worried Speck went to again check on her dog. That's when I guess the tiger jumped on top of my dog, and the officers just started firing rounds and took it down and then gave me my dog back.
I mean, when you hear your dog barking, you have some idea of what you're going to find. Your brain's not anticipating tiger.
No shit. Maybe if you were in, like, the savannah of Africa or something. Yeah. But
I mean, if you're in Georgia, like, if you walk downstairs and you see a tiger attacking your dog, you don't know what to do. You have no instinct. There's no, like, rush to the dog's defense or run. Like, you don't know. Like, if the tiger just get bored to come after you, it's a tiger. I don't know if a door can stop a tiger. It's a fucking tiger. I mean, what the hell? What? And then, I guess I know why they did it, but damn it, man. Of course you hillbillies in the South are like, well, fuck it, man. Just shoot it. They all pull out their fucking, like, pistols and be like, just have at it, boys. And they all just like, there's a couple of cops there going, this is the greatest fucking day of my life. I mean, I shot a fucking tiger. Like, I you fuckers think you hunted something? I hunted a tiger. You ever just blast it away? Just shoot it. Like, this is your big solution? Just shoot it?
Well, what else would you do?
I don't know. I guess I'd try to set up a civilization where tigers don't get loose in Georgia.
Maybe
I'd have a law prohibiting that.
I think, like, they didn't have time. Like, you would probably call, like, animal control or something, but they're not usually equipped for a tiger. They're getting, like, I don't know, coyotes and shit like that. Like, I can't imagine. They would have had to shoot it with a tranquilizer, but when it's in a neighborhood and it's attacking a dog, you don't really have time to wait for animal control to come with their tranquilizer.
I'm surprised that they shot it with the regular bullets, though. Like, I feel like those wouldn't put down a tiger.
It depends how many times you shoot it in the head, I guess.
I know, but, man, I'd be kind of nervous.
Like you shoot it in the head and it comes at you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all you can do is keep shooting it. If it gets you, it's a tiger.
Well, the other one is, where did this tiger come from? Is the other question, because they're saying, like, this was a full-grown tiger. You saw the pictures. It was a big-ass tiger. And the lieutenant of some Georgia Department of Natural Resources said, there's one facility permitted in the area to hold tigers. We have visited the facility and verified that all their animals are accounted for. So this is, like, some rich guy, mogul, rapper, somebody who's got, like, a thing for exotic animals. Like the Hardy's compound or something. And this thing just got loose. Nobody knows where this tiger came from or who it belonged to, but it's like somebody was illegally keeping this tiger in their neighborhood. And
you could put a sign up around the neighborhood.
I
lost one tiger.
There's a tiger. Yeah. Like when you lose your dog, like put the phone number, don't chase it. It's friendly. Call us. Yeah.
Responds to, is a big fan of running down and killing game. Yeah, you could have some, I don't know, man. Like, you shouldn't be owning Tigers. Although I know that,
didn't Tyson had one or something, right? Or
yeah, Lion? Tyson had a Tiger. They're all over the place in Texas.
Mm.
There are 3,000 Tigers living in the wild in the world. There are like 50,000 living in captivity in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember
Texas
that.
Is fucked up. Like, what? Like, they were nervous with the hurricane. The Tigers would get loose.
Oh, like they'd swim above the cages and just be swimming around?
Or something, you know, the enclosures would break and the gates would open or something like that. There was some, like, wildlife park. They had, like, 150 alligators. They were afraid those were going to get loose. But they didn't, because that would have been too awesome. Like, people were afraid to walk through downtown Houston because of the alligator problem.
And a couple other police-related stories. Two men were arrested after police say they robbed a bar outside Baltimore while off-duty officers were there for a police retirement party. The Baltimore Sun reports the men allegedly demanded cash from the register at a Woodlawn bar Tuesday evening while a group of officers gathered for a longtime sergeant's retirement. The officers chased and arrested them. Baltimore County Police spokesman says 21-year-old Joseph McGinnis and 22-year-old Tyree McCoy face armed robbery, theft, and other charges. Their son reports neither had an attorney listed in online court records. The pub's owner says it's odd that someone would attempt a robbery there because a precinct station is right across the street. So basically these two geniuses held up a restaurant, which usually has, like, no money in them anyway, because everybody pays with, like, charge cards now. Go in, try and rob this restaurant that's right across from the police station during a police officer's retirement party.
Did you know that in Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
they have, like, those tests that they have to take in high school, like, if you're proficient in math
okay,
and English and all that? And the scale on math was something like, there's like, I'll say it's like 1 to 5, something like that. And like a 5 is like your top level super school. It's like everybody's really, really good at math. And like a 3 is where you have to be considered proficient. And that's like, you know, passing in the school is okay. And a 1 is, you know, nobody does it. There were 6 schools in Baltimore where nobody could do math. Nobody. So I'm not surprised if these geniuses get out and then try to rob a cop restaurant.
But that was just good. Like, what the hell? Or wrong place, wrong time, right place. Yeah, whatever that
is. This is the dumbest city in the world. I mean, come on. They had fucking riots, and what did their mayors say? I'll let them. Give them some space. And she literally said, let them work it out. Like, what? Even if that's your plan, don't say that. Don't tell the rioters, go for it. That can't be your answer. Jesus, what a disaster of a city. Nobody can read. Nobody can do math. Nobody knows that you shouldn't rob cops. Generally, like, the first thing you do when you scout a location to rob is you look for the police officer or the security camera. That's the first thing you do.
Mm.
But even easier than scouting it for that is when you pull up to the place in your car, you know, you have to pull up before you scout it. You have to drive to the place you're going to scout. You're in the car. You're not even at where you're going to scout. And already you can look out and see the fucking police station. You don't even have to scout the place. You just go, well, that's off limits forever. Because that's a police station. And that's a diner. And meth is not that good.
Now, I'd like to preface this final story with this. I feel sorry for this woman, but her behavior is newsworthy and worth discussing. A few weeks ago, we talked about the woman who attacked an off-duty police officer with a knife while she was topless. She got out of the car at the red light and chased him, and he just drove away. She was also arrested a few months before that because she broke into a deli and stole a large amount of chicken salad from the deli. I'm guessing you recall this story.
Oh, yeah.
She was back in the news this weekend. This woman lives on Cape Cod, you know, within a few miles of where I live. And she got in trouble the other day, and I just felt I should follow up on this news story because I like to be...
Is she hooking?
I'm not sure what she's up to at this very moment, but police were called to the scene of a loud party at 6:20 p.m. on Monday, August 28th. Mind you, that's not even Labor Day weekend yet. That's just a random Monday in August. The reporting party noted that they saw a blue truck being operated erratically while leaving the party, driving over lawns in the area. Police found the pickup truck and noted that it was making a loud rumbling sound. As the vehicle approached, the officer saw that it was running on three tires. The fourth wheel was only the rim. When the vehicle was stopped, the operator stepped out of the vehicle. She told police, "This car is fucked and I'm shit-faced." Police also noted that she was only wearing one boot and they were not sure where the other boot was. The officer attempted to administer a field sobriety test, but the woman refused, saying that the cleft in the chin means the devil's within. At this point, the woman was placed under arrest. She was charged with operating under the influence of liquor for a third offense, carrying a dangerous weapon, operating a motor vehicle with a revoked license, possessing an open container of alcohol in a motor vehicle, and wantonly injuring real or personal property.
Wait, I'm sorry. Driving a car with only three wheels isn't a crime?
Maybe not in Massachusetts. We have weird old blue laws from the Puritan days.
Did the Puritans oppose three wheels or something?
I'm not sure.
So she's a winner?
Here's a piece of advice. If you get pulled over by the police, don't get out of the car and say, "This car is fucked and I am shit-faced."
Yeah, it's usually tough to deny things when you flat say, like, "Guys, you don't need the breathalyzer. I'm shit-faced. This car is fucked," if you haven't been able to tell by the missing wheel. Also, I'm missing a shoe. I bet my shoe and the wheel are at the same place.
Maybe she was trying to replace the rubber that made the tire up with the rubber on the soles of her boots.
Sure, yeah. I think she probably traded them away in a game of chance.
But that must have been quite the party, too.
It would be. That's fucking legendary. When you're like, your party ends, you're like, "I was at the party, dude. I was drinking. I blacked out. Next thing I know, I'm getting pulled over by the cops. I'm missing a shoe. I don't have my bra on. I'm missing a wheel. I don't know what's going on around here. I didn't even know you could drive without a fucking wheel. And I'm getting arrested. Man, I ain't never doing that much coke again."
And everyone's lawn is ruined in the whole neighborhood. I want to go by there. I got to drive by there some morning and check it out. I want to see what that scene is like over there. Because I'm not exactly sure where this is, but it's nearby.
I mean, just a little kid looks out his bedroom window and the car stops, falls down to one corner because it's missing a wheel. This woman gets out. "This car is fucked. And I am wasted." Like, what?
Yeah. Well, the original premise, I was going to do a bit where we were going to do, was it Cape Cod or was it Chicago? But I just couldn't be bothered to look up Chicago news stories like that. But it would have been good because I could have followed up with that with this lady and it would have been a good segment, but I wasn't committed enough.
Yeah, well,
but
things happen.
On that note, we've gone 3+ hours. We're getting into dangerous Joe Rogan experience. I know, but I had so many stories and so many browsers open.
Well, we don't have to do everything.
I didn't do everything.
Son of a bitch, shoot me in the head.
On that note, that's a good way to close the show. Thanks for listening. We will presumably be back next week. We can talk about DJ setting the record. And we will talk to you again. Thanks for listening. NMA and stuff, halfguarded.com. Listen to it, iTunes, everywhere. Bye.
I'm finished.